Well, okay, we'll see. Hello, everybody. We are live. If you guys can hear, please just post in the comments that you're hearing us and we can get started. So I need to see. Usually the okay, there. Now the live counter's up. So
there we go.
Now it'll start populating. There's definitely more than okay, zero people in. We got 13 people here. What is up, guys? Can you hear us?
Can you hear us? Can you hear us?
Somebody let us know. And then I need to hop on Twitter and say and put the live link as well.
Okay.
So let's just see while this kind of sorts itself out.
Sweet, they can hear us. I'd put it on my Twitter as well, but I have like 200
Okay,
followers, so.
sweet, sweet, sweet. So guys, let me post a tweet real fast, but I'll do another introduction as more people start filtering in. But this is Kermit. He is the researcher you guys know who helped me out with the SAIC. Hey, it's C. Britton.
Yeah, what's up, Zebrin?
He helped tremendously with SAIC, looking at contracts, working that case with me. So let me just get a tweet out real fast. And
Yeah, for
Kermit, if you
sure.
just want to introduce yourself while I'm doing this, please feel free.
Hey, y'all, I'm Kermit. How's it going? I've been posting about UFO stuff under the Reddit name Frog and Badger. My kind of angle with this is kind of the legal financial framework. You know, specifically, you know, we heard today, I mean, yesterday from the representatives about how they're interested in how taxpayer funds are being spent on these programs, and that's kind of my it's kind of my area of expertise and my intellectual curiosity, so to speak. So, been very blessed to be able to work with Gerb the past couple of months on a bunch of different projects. He came to me over the summer, was like, "Hey, I want to put out this this documentary on a company that you've been actually doing a lot of research on," and we did a really good collaboration for that. I'm actually very happy with how it turned out, and yeah. Just digging through financial filings and trying to make sense of this legacy program, you know? So the truth is out there.
All right. All right. I'm almost done. Just live. Sorry, guys. I'm just posting this on Twitter.
Might as well just show everyone in the chat here. Gerb and I were able to visit the National Air and Space Museum, and I was able to pick up a reproduction vehicle, if you want to call it that, B-2 stealth bomber. So it's
For
sitting
anybody
right there, you know.
that doesn't know, there are classic stories of the B-2 bomber utilizing electrogravitic technology for an internal mass reduction of up to 89%, and then electrogravitic technology to kind of obfuscate both exhaust signatures and radar cross section. So I'm posting this, guys, and then we shall get started right away.
Let's do it.
Okay, send now. Okay, what's up? Okay, so we'll start just looking. What we'll do, guys, is we'll kind of talk about our time in DC. We're both in here right now at Capitol Hill, so I'd like to talk a little bit about DC and the hearings, as well as we were able to attend the UAP Disclosure Fund meeting last night. So we got a lot to talk about. We'll talk about Immaculate Constellation and everything, and then we'll kind of go through questions and so forth. So C's is asking right now, who is that guy? C's, we'll say it again. He just introduced himself, but this is Kermit. He's the excellent researcher who helped me out with the SAIC research. The link to his Reddit will be in the description page. He's made some awesome posts on kind of analyzing the legacy program framework within SEC securities frameworks and stuff. And if you want to tell a little bit about that, a little bit about that post, I'm sure people would love to hear that.
Yeah, for sure. My most recent post that I published, I want to say a month and a half ago, I kind of looked at kind of all the laws on the books around like national security programs and then not disclosing those operations on like a private company's financial statements, right? So going back like almost 100 years back to the SEC Act of 1934, which kind of historical context, that was written into law because of the Great Depression and trying to reform the banking system. But included within the SEC Act of 1934 was a specific exemption that allowed for the president and the heads of his executive agencies to waive reporting requirements for any company that was involved with classified activities under an executive order. So basically, from that, and then throughout kind of the chronology over decades, we kind of see a strengthening of those laws and those regulations that allow for companies like Lockheed Martin, SAIC, you know, other defense primes to basically, you know, do this classified work and not be as transparent or use a little bit more discretion with how they report those operations in their financial statements.
And that's such interesting work. I mean, I know of some other individuals who are trying to kind of attack legacy program for more of a financial framework. And this is something that I personally don't see enough in the industry. and kind of UAP researcher. So I think that's really interesting, you know, carrying on the legacy of Catherine Austin Fitz, mm-hmm. the Black Budget of the United States, and so forth. I just need to make sure we're caught up. Right now I'm worried about the this Wi-Fi here in the hotel. So I'm just checking up that our dang stream is live, guys. I'm sorry. We're at the Holiday Inn Capitol Hill, and okay, we are. Perfect. It doesn't have the best Wi-Fi. Okay, so already, Foozy Electron saying, I'm liking Kermit, dude.
I'm cool with
Kermit,
that.
Kermit's the dog. We've been having so much fun. So, you know, we'll talk a little bit about the hearings. We both got in on Tuesday night. I was fortunate enough to get a media pass for the hearings. So
that was awesome. Yeah, that was very awesome.
If you guys see some of the photos of, I think, who is it, Rep Higgins?
Yeah, I think Higgins? So, yeah.
I mean, the profile picture of the video from, I think, Higgins, I'm kind of right there on the side. Mm-hmm. It was really cool because, you know, right in front of the witnesses was Amar from Yes Theory and some other photographers snapping away. Yep. You know, inside the room, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the lines and so forth. This, we talked to many, many, many of the
Oh, you know, we did. Oh, yeah.
Yes, and we'll also talk about the Event Horizon interview as well, because something or someone I'm quite close to, Ross, the producer of Event Horizon, and John Michael Godier, so I've been able to talk to them a ton. TW, this is a friend of mine. There's no Peter here. This is Kermit, but thanks, T. Yeah, so doors for the House building, they opened at 7 a.m.
Actually, earlier than that, there were people standing in line at like midnight the night before.
I think one of them was Robert Salas, but I think some people like Matt from the Good Trouble Show have been getting heat from Green Street because they actually paid professional waiters to wait in line. So I had because I had the media pass, you know, I was afforded a little extra time. I was going to go in right away, but I had some issues just sleeping due to excitement, so I had to wait maybe an hour or two before you. So he showed up at actual 7 a.m. So what was it like first doors open and waiting to get in?
Yeah, I mean, strolling down Capitol Ave to go to the Rayburn office building. I've never been inside like the Capitol building or any of that stuff. I've never attended hearings before, so this is like a new experience for me. And I showed up like in kind of the line for the UFO hearing at like about 7 that morning. And at that point, like the line was very, very deep. And I will say there were a lot of people in that line at that point that I was like, oh my God, like that's Matt Ford, that's Lester. Like, oh my God, it was a verifiable, like who's who of, you know, the UFO world. And got to shake a lot of people's hands, got to meet a bunch of really cool people. Unfortunately, I was in kind of the point or the part of the line that ended up not making it into the main room. I was like 10 people off from getting into that main area, but thankfully, the staffers were able to take kind of the rest of us, put us up in overflow, and watch that live upstairs. So, I mean, not great, but, you know, it is what it is.
Can you pull up a picture of the overflow TV?
Yeah, for sure.
Because I felt terrible about these guys. Because, you know, I'll just say, show it, and then I'll make a quick comment. Because, you know, I got a lot to say from an almost exact opposite point of view.
I mean, it seemed like going in, like it seemed like the hearing room was going to be a bit bigger than the one last year. And it was like, okay,
it was the same hearing room, guy. It was the exact same hearing room.
It was the exact.
Yes. Yes. But that. there were like, I think 5 rows of seats. Yeah. Show this.
So this is, I don't know if you guys can see this.
It should, if you hold it closer, it should auto adjust.
Okay.
Let's... Oh no. Okay. There yes. Go. There we go. That's the
so,
TV.
So that was the screen that I was watching from, everybody. Front row seat kind of, which was cool.
Let's get the camera to auto adjust. Oh, that adjusted poorly.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah. It's starting to work.
Show my phone. I won't show any other pictures.
We're still washed out with light, but that's all right. So kind of from my POV, I got to go in at a hearing started at 11:30. I got to go in at 11 through the media entrance. Some other people who got to do that were, Jesse, Amar from Yes Theory, Chris from Area 52. He recently put out the Project Gravatar interview. And I got to talk to him. I never met him. He's awesome. I really liked speaking to him. Chris was great. You know, Jesse was rocking around in kind of his more laxed wear. I think it's so funny because only Jesse could get away with that. In line, you know, most people have their suits on. They're looking quite dapper. They're ready to go. And then there's some people out there with like alien headbands on.
There was a lot of different fits on, man. There were a bunch of different people. Talk about a like very, you know, just like every, like all walks of life, you know what I mean? So that was really cool to see too.
All walks of life. Unifying. But the only person that could really pull it off, I'd say was Jesse. The only person who looked like normal in the sense with a kind of strange clothing on was Jesse. But yeah, some of the people that were pretty early in line were like Robert Salas. I think Chris Bledsoe was there. Mm-hmm. But as far as people meeting, waiting in line met a ton of people. There were actually a couple of people who recognized my name, which was really cool. There were a few people like that. It was awesome. It was great to talk to some people. So many people showed out. But, you know, before getting in, talk to Jesse, Area 52, James Fox, a bunch. James Fox actually posted a video kind of walking through the hall. And I think I walked right in front of him and I just looked like an idiot in that. Lester Nair as well from the UAP caucus. He's a friend of ours. He actually was one of the people who helped us get into the UAPDF. And that was really great. But so getting into the actual witness room, we got to get in 30 minutes early. And from there, some of the RSVPs, some of the reserved seats got to pour in. And this took up about two and a half of the five rows. And of these people were people you'd expect, you know, Leslie Kane. We'll talk a little bit more about her later because I actually got to talk to her for quite a while at the UAPDF. Jeremy Corbell, I have some good insights as to the drama there. Who else? James Fox, mm-hmm. Jesse, Chris, Ryan Graves, a ton of people started to pour in and the witnesses even early. So before the hearing even started, I got to chat a little bit with Jeremy and so forth. I actually had a kind of a funny experience with him. I introduced myself to Jeremy. I said, you know, hello, my name is, I gave him my first name. And he's like, where have I seen you before? And I said, maybe on YouTube under Gerb. And so he goes, yeah, one of the whistleblowers you spoke to is correct. I went, who? Like who? And he's like, that should
and
be enough.
He just refused to elaborate.
And then winked at me and said he had to like center himself a little bit before the hearing. So Jeremy, you know, sometimes I criticize his work a little bit. Everyone's work can be criticized. Everyone's work has flaws, but he was a really nice guy. I really enjoyed speaking to him. He was a kind of a class act. However, after the hearing, which we'll discuss a little more, he was pretty upset that he was the one who gave Congress on that day the 12-page Immaculate Constellation report.
Mm.
I think Schellenberger's witness gave it to Burchett a while ago, right? But I believe the situation was at this current day that Jeremy gave the Immaculate Constellation report to Mace and others. So there was a point where Mace in the starting to talk about the hearings, Jeremy started like getting visibly extremely upset. And afterwards, you know, he was like on the brink of tears. He was so furious. And, you know, some people were talking to him, trying to get pictures. And he was being really nice about that. He was taking pictures with everybody, kind of being a class act. But I say, you know, I talked to Merrick von Rennekamp. I said, hey, what's up with Jeremy? And so he explained the situation to me. And so I went up to talk to Jeremy because this will be coming out in a little bit, but I got to interview Rhett Burleson afterwards. Kermit was actually my show man there.
We got some
good questions about there. It's not a super long interview. However, some of the questions asked were on, was he expecting other witnesses? Because I think somebody, Jit Boy, yeah, by the way, I introduced myself to Oakshane and I'm planning to talk to him more. But yeah, some of the questions asked without spilling any details were, you know, seeing if, was seeing if Burleson had expected other witnesses, right? Because mm-hmm. we all heard rumors of firsthand.
Yeah, it was going to be firsthand guys.
Crash retrieval, legacy program witnesses, asked him about that. Asked him specifically about ARV. Asked him specifically if he's read the Grush op-ed, which, you know, I'm sure people really want to hear about that. Mm-hmm. And asked him specifically if Congress has received actionable intelligence as it started to move on some of these locations that have been named.
Yep.
So Burleson, in my opinion, along with Luna and Moskowitz, actually asked all the best questions of the hearing. So before we get into hearing and discussing some of the questions, what was asked, a couple funny points. Burchett was killing Diet Mountain Dew the whole show. I think he had three Diet Mountain Dews.
And Mike loves that Mountain Dew.
And Michael Gold was just eating candy the whole time. He had a Lenovo laptop. It had the greasiest trackpad I ever saw. Jimmy, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Seriously. Falconhead, we talked about this just now, but Corbell was upset because he submitted the 12-page Immaculate Constellation report to Nancy Mace right before the hearing, and it was attributed to Schellenberger, not Corbell, when the report was kind of entered into the congressional record, and he was furious about that. And there were only 11 pages, not 12. I think Jesse just tweeted the last page.
Oh, really?
That, yeah, from Jeremy Kenyon Locker Corbell. So If you guys want to see that, go to Jesse Michaels' page. And also, now's a good time. I posted a picture of it, talked about it a little bit, because you got to meet Jesse. Everybody got to meet Jesse. Last week, I was just out in Austin to record a show for Jesse. And so that should be out soon. There we talk about everything from crash retrievals to the McCandless story to ARV to deep underground military bases. I added in some, we actually go a little bit into Ed, the witness from Edwards Air Force Base. And we talked a little bit about his background, kind of referencing some of his public stations and so forth. So I think that's going to be really interesting. While you're looking at that, I think we got two questions here, including one with Joey. They had 1 year to force just one Grush hostile witness or aerospace exec to the stand, but bring Gold, new congresswoman. Yeah, so I think Gold is a people are pretty hot and cold about Gold, right?
Yeah.
He was really pro NASA, which I think NASA is likely at least somewhat privy to UAP crash retrieval programs. And NASA has historically lied about UAP. As well, including a study in 1979 or 1980. It was 1978 or 1979. There were FOIA requests where NASA had previously stated they never looked into UAP, but a bunch of FOIA documents came out showing that NASA had been taking kind of an eye of UAP reports very seriously.
Yeah.
So let's see what Joey says here. What's up, Joey? I thought someone quote Bruchette saying Corbell was the guy who gave them a report months ago.
I did hear something.
Yeah,
kind of similar.
I did as well, that he was involved.
Yeah.
Additionally,
GURP, have you read the 12th page?
You just skimmed
Jesse?
It once. You so wanna? Yeah.
It is. So it's a cover letter from Jeremy Corbell. That was supposed to be the cover letter, and kind of talks a little bit about how he got the document and all that, but. It's not like an additional page of the document. It's basically, I believe Jeremy, trying to, convey that, he is kind of a part of this effort, in providing this report to Congress. I think that's what's really the meat of it.
Yeah. Okay. I think someone as well as, Throsey here both make good points. Well, it's good to have a NASA guy calling for more transparency. It's still, how much exactly can NASA be trusted? Also, this guy was connected with OSAP and Bigelow Aerospace. Mm-hmm. So why were questions not asked and why was the topic not discussed about OSAP trying to kind of facilitate craft transfer from Lockheed Martin?
Yeah, well, they didn't even name Lockheed Martin.
No.
I mean, Lou and others were quite afraid to even name it themselves. And then even like one of the Congress people was like, we know this is the Lockheed Martin case, and he said it out loud. But then when the response came back, it wasn't like, oh yeah, it was they said it was a contractor.
Right.
It was a contractor. But like, as we've been kind of understanding the story over years, it's like, well, we know what that contractor is. So like, why are we being cagey about it?
And where's the money trail? This is something where Deegan, this is something that Kermit, he's tracking down the financials of legacy programs we're trying to uncover. There's reason to believe that sometimes programs are skimmed off of existing programs, such as the F-35, a $1.5 to $2 trillion program that witness Ed served as a subject matter expert to various contracting companies after his time in reverse engineering programs at Air Force. Ed, this witness, also stated while working on the R&D panel chain at the Pentagon that in two fiscal years, $34 billion and then $40 billion in non-transfer of authority funds were kind of issued back channel to legacy programs under the Air Force. So kind of trying to track this stuff down, but let's see what two cents here. What's
I
up,
have
Tanner?
Some, I have some cents on this as well.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Please. So I think in terms of like funding, and we want to think about like kind of the avenues of what's kind of going on here just over time. I think it would not surprise me if there's kind of a bunch of different things that are going on at play. Because ultimately, right, you're just trying to obfuscate this financial data so that people that, otherwise have that access to that information, they can't figure out what that money is actually going towards.
Right.
So, I mean, in and of itself, the money trail is part of the obfuscation. Trying to figure that out is about as important, I feel like, as trying to see the craft and the bodies and all that stuff. So, it's kind of one of those core tenets, and, the truth is out there, but I've been in this space for a year and a half, and I still have a bunch of different theories about it. So
yeah,
we can talk about it for sure.
And that's why we're trying to kind of track down other people with a financial background like Kermit to really kind of make like a think tank on this subject, because I'm financially illiterate when it comes to tracking this stuff down. I can just report like witness Ed found $34 and $40 billion in non-TOA funds, but I can't really understand the significance of that or make heads or tails of a balance sheet.
Yeah. Cause it's one thing for a witness to say like, this is what I saw. But then, that's the substantive evidence of like, I saw the ledger, I saw the transactions. This is corroborating basically that story, right?
So, yeah, because Keegan was saying that's a lot of funds. Yes, it is. I mean, at the R&D panel chain, he was overseeing over $200 billion per year in Air Force funds.
Total, just to kind of give everybody an idea, like when we talk about R&D and IRAD, right? Cumulatively, the United States government spends about $150 billion annually just on defense R&D alone. That is a huge chunk of change. So, I mean, the number could be anywhere from zero to that or even something different than that entirely. We don't even know.
But then there still exists the theory, and I don't know how we would explore this more, that some of these legacy programs, if they are being conducted out of a kind of a closed off military base, an underground base, perhaps they run off of closed systems. There are claims out there that some of these locations run off a cache-based system, just as they do analog computers.
Well, that'd be smart because you basically minimize the audit trail. You know, people, just like money talks, right?
Right.
So people are spending money. If you have a the smaller the system, the more closed that it is, the less chance that you have it of being uncovered.
And we were at the Air and Space Museum today, and we were kind of hypothesizing, what if these programs with the craft like the ARV are able to just strip mine the asteroid belt for precious metals and so forth?
Yeah,
and
you don't even need to get capital or financing or anything here from Earth. If you just get everything from your materials and products off world, then no one's the wiser, right? So that makes sense.
2 cents. Thank you so much. Speaking of Seoul, Kermit and I will be going as well there. So
yep.
I know you guys are already showing Kermit a lot of love. We'll do another stream after Seoul as well. I can't wait to do that. And thank you again. Let me see this, and then we'll keep talking about the hearings. Thank you, Wag Boss, paying ties to the Overlord. Now, I'll never be an Overlord. Let's just hope John Jones gets knocked out this weekend, man, and I'll be a happy dude. So, you know, I'd like to say, and I'm sure we talked about this a little bit, I was impressed with Lou, not only with his testimony, but as a person as well. I was able to talk to him quite a bit, both before the hearings. I just bumped into him while I was scrambling to find the house building. I got, you know, coffee for a couple of friends. And so I'm just walking there. I see Lou outside. You know, I see a guy followed by cameras, and he's like 2 feet taller. I mean, 2 feet shorter than the rest of them. So I know that's Lou. And I introduced myself and talked to him for a while. He was extremely kind. I think he did well answering questions as well into the congressional report. You know, I've said this to you, and I'm sure you'll agree, there's still a lot of questions about Lou's background, OSAP and ATIP, that Greenwald has diligently tried to get answers to for years. And how the heck are we going to get answers to what Lou's specific position was? Because now, of course, he has sworn into congressional testimony that he was a high-ranking member at OSAP, correct? Or was it ATIP? I'm just trying to remember off the top of my head.
Well, I think that's the nature of the debate, is it not? I think in his book, he claims that he was part of both OSAP and ATIP. And
right.
OSAP was kind of the initial effort where, you know, they were trying to get that divestiture from Lockheed. And then ATIP kind of was the effort post OSAP once that kind of fell through. That's my understanding of it, at least.
And I think one of the most consequential reports is Lou saying he cannot answer about being read into a crash retrieval program.
Yeah, that was quite telling. I thought that was very telling.
So Lou spoke at the UAPDF, which was kind of a closed event we were able to attend afterwards. And this speech saw, you know, fellow speeches by Representative Burleson and Representative Rounds.
Senator Rounds.
Yeah, Senator Rounds. So this was a very consequential talk. I had some time to speak with Lou because I know a long time ago I had kind of informed some friends that via an analyst friend that Lou would be agreeable to interview. Well, after this congressional testimony, I'd like to interview him now, you know, actually interview him in person, because especially with his testimony, with Lou's media tour, I was kind of worried about, you know, not really being able to approach with fresh questions, because he's kind of answering everything. He's doing like 50 podcasts. But now I would really like to speak to him and just kind of ask him to expand on some of the things he said and kind of testified to. I think number one, and I'm not going to be able to solve this on my platform, but to kind of clear up more issues around ATIP and OSAP.
Yeah.
Because Lakatsky, Stratton, Kelleher, everybody's got a little bit of a different spin. Eric Davis.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they discussed Jay Stratton as well during the hearings too. And I think he's also coming out with his book imminently. Not the name of it, but it's coming out quite soon.
Well, hopefully we can talk to Eric Davis about this next week at Seoul,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because first of all, I'd like to thank you so much, Shawan, for the $5. I really appreciate that. Seoul is actually speaking at, Schrock is speaking at Seoul next week. And he's also doing a Q&A. I believe it's with Eric Davis, right?
Sounds right.
Okay, so yeah, there should be some good stuff. Let me go through these and we'll keep talking. Django, I love that pig. Thank you so much for the $15. And Fat Rodents, thank you very much. Does this change what you'll ask at Soul at all? Well, I'd like to interview some people at Soul, so we'll see what we can do there. I've talking with Kermit, you know, we're trying to work out some stuff for him to, you know, maybe go in a little bit more on some good camera equipment and actually travel around to get some good interviews, but not just interviews, right? Like actual documentaries spliced in with research and so forth. Because interviewing Lou, I don't just want to sit in front of a camera with him for 2 hours, but add in research. So I'd just like to ask you, Kermit, could you rank in terms of impact and efficacy and just all around feel who you think was the most consequential person to testify to least? And guys in the chat, give me a 1 through 4, 1 being the most consequential, 4 being the least.
That's a good question. I'd say probably most consequential. I don't know. My personal perspective of it is like the questions themselves are the controversial, you know, that was the provocative stuff. But in terms of people, I would say Gallaudet being there and being a representative from, you know, the Navy and NOAA and being very high up in those positions, you know, he being a representative of the U.S. military and that kind of cohort, and then Elizondo representing military intelligence, Schellenberger being a journalist, and then finally Michael Gold being a scientist, right? Mm-hmm. So it was like, I felt like the panel overall was very well stocked and it was diverse and it had all the people that we want to hear from about this subject. I think Gallaudet was probably, for me, I think that was probably the most interesting, like those questions and those answers were probably the most interesting because we've heard from Lou, you know, from his books and interviews and all this stuff. And he does discuss a lot of it. And there was certainly some interesting things discussed today with him, yesterday. But I'd say Gallaudet. I also think Michael Gold, I was actually very impressed with the way that he kind of spoke about it. And I think he spoke very positively about just like NASA collaborating on this in the future and just kind of moving past the stigma that we see with this topic and just trying to get, you know, the scientific community really to take this seriously and investigate it. So I would say Gallaudet and Michael Gold were my top two picks. I loved Lou. I loved what he got to say. And I was really impressed with the way that, you know, he presented himself and he was just being very, you know, frank with those responses as well. And, you know, he can't talk outside of, you know, the documents and the things that he signed and, you know, all that stuff. So, and I know that's frustrating for a lot of people, but I still thought it was very positive.
I agree. And, you know, I've seen a lot of bitterness online kind of about the efficacy of the hearings. I agree with everybody that I also expected, as did Burleson, firsthand retrieval witnesses or firsthand program witnesses. I'll save that for the interview with Burleson, but just Burleson was expecting other people to testify as well or in place of. He didn't specify about that. But I do think one of the key takeaways here with Immaculate Constellation is kind of an existing proof now of DOD lying about a USAP. You know, the protocol for a USAP, an unacknowledged special access program, is deny.
They can't even say anything. No. Like even an admission or a denial would like
that, but if your back's against the wall, then you misinform. That's the protocol. That deny. Sense. If you cannot deny anymore, you misinform. Yeah. So I think this was important to see because, you know, there's so many statements from Susan Goh saying the Immaculate Constellation is not a program and so forth. I do think the 12-page you know, report, which is super interesting, which we'll get into in a little bit. You know, Kermit and I have been talking at length about one specific report from there. And of course, the term alien reproduction vehicle, which I kind of got on Schellenberger's a little bit for omitting from his congressional submission. But he didn't even mention that at all in his testimony, which I was a little bit disappointed of. And I even asked Jeremy about that. I said, hey, Jeremy, you know, why didn't he do that? He's like, well, you can just ask him why they lied. He was too hot under the collar to do that. We'll take a quick break, look at a couple questions. What do you think about Nancy Mace selling UFO branded merch? I think it's in bad taste.
Yeah. I will say, you know, seeing kind of the representatives and how they've kind of been tweeting about this, like that seems positive. But then, you know, seeing the merch that's being sold, it's just on the nose, you know, and it like, see, it's like a UFO, it's a shirt of like a UFO and it's got Nancy Mace like in it.
I think it's bad taste. I think it's bad taste. I like this idea a lot, Magic, and I will absolutely ask him about it. So, okay. I'll, what's your guys' thoughts on the simulation hypothesis? pretty interesting. Of course, there's a great podcast on the simulation hypothesis that kind of states that in the future, if a civilization has the computing power to conduct a simulation of a whole hypothesis, that means they won't just stop at one simulation. They will conduct numerous, possibly even infinite. And therefore, if there's infinite simulated hypotheses of universes in the future, that yours is statistically more likely to be a simulated one. It's interesting, but you know, I can't prove it. What do you say, Kerm?
It's just too much bandwidth for me, man. I just show me an Excel
file. He likes money. Yeah, he likes money.
Debits and credits. Show me a 10K. Like, I mean, it's not. I wouldn't be surprised if that's like. I feel like what Grush said last year, I think, is a pretty good description.
Holographic.
Yeah, where he's just like whenever he kind of had this line where he's like, you know, you kind of look in places in the universe, and it seems like things are just a little too perfect. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you know. I don't know. I feel like that's kind of where I kind of stand with this. Yeah. Of like, you know, the more we kind of understand the world around us, it's like we really get to understand like why we're here and like what's the nature of existence. And yeah, what's interesting though is you know, Rizwan Virk, he's going to be at the he's going to be at Seoul, and he's going to give a discussion about the simulation.
Ooh, well. That's going to be. Yep, we'll have to talk about that.
Post. He also on Joe Rogan said that he knew people in the Legacy program as well.
Did he?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, we'll have to talk about that as well. So Schellenberger, Liu, Gallaudet, and Gold. I think it was in extremely poor taste for Higgins or whoever it was that was trying to burn Schellenberger's whistleblower.
Yeah, I wasn't. I don't know. I thought Higgins' line of questioning was like kind of half baked a little bit. And
yeah.
I get that you guys are trying to figure out what the source is, but like at the end of the day, Schellenberger was literally said he was willing to go to jail to protect that source.
Yeah.
So you just gotta respect that.
So Sawan, thank you again for the next $5, man. Yeah, Schrock, so isn't just a former director of Skunk Works on the USAF advisory board. He probably did about know about the OSAP transfer, so I really hope we can hear about that at Seoul. So
it'll be very interesting to hear from him next week.
Gold, Schellenberger, Gallaudet, Elizondo. I know something or someone. I know you're not the biggest Elizondo proponent. The thing that worried me the most about Gallaudet speaking and was kind of reinforced, first of all, I loved Tim Gallaudet. Kermit can see Tim's my boy. We spoke quite a bit. Super nice guy. I've talked to him a lot before. He had seen the channel with the USO videos. But I was worried because when Chris Sharp's reporting on Neuro and undersea crash retrievals came out with Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and Lockheed Martin dry submersible, I reached out to Gallaudet and, you know, I just said, hey, sir, like, can we talk about these underwater crash retrievals? And he told me, I don't know anything about it. And at that point, I rationed, okay, he's bound by NDA. He can't speak about this. It makes sense. I'll back off. But then, of course, at the hearing, he said he'd never signed an NDA towards anything
he
UAT.
He did say that,
so
yep.
That does worry me a little bit. He doesn't know about USO retrievals. Harry, thank you very much. Who was your favorite during the breaks, meetups, and formal chats? Probably Burleson, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought our conversation with Burleson post hearing, and then he was also at the UAPDF.
He was at the
post party as well. We got some FaceTime there as well. Mm-hmm. So
it was really great talking to him. He is a sharp cat. We also got to talk to numerous House staffers as well.
Oh yeah, yep.
We'll get into that once we finish up the hearings. But you know, we'll just say for now we got a lot of business cards, which was great.
Contact information was exchanged.
Okay, Jim Shu says, on what impact, if any, will Trump have on deeper disclosure? I already think that he's making consequential moves by placing men like Rubio in power, which Rubio, of course, has been trying to subpoena and interview witnesses since at least 2008.
And Matt Gaetz being the attorney general that was just announced today. I think that's significant.
I think he's setting up a pretty pro-disclosure cabinet.
I know there's been a lot of talks as well with this Department of Government Efficiency, which seems to be more and more like a real thing. Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, if you guys are watching this stream, I would love to join the effort in specifically trying to audit this legacy program activity.
Hey, let's get this man in Doge. That'd be pretty cool. So what stuck out to Throzy here was the idea of tracking ARVs. This implies that foreign ARVs are uncontrolled domestic ARVs. I think both probably. Remember, this is something that even Congress really got wrong. Immaculate Constellation is not a legacy program. Mm-hmm. This was made in 2017 in an attempt to, I guess, umbrella over both legacy program and UAP.
And it happened concurrent with Lou Elizondo coming out public with the New York Times article.
So Immaculate Constellation would not have access. Members of Immaculate Constellation would not have read-on access to, let's say, the Air Force Legacy program that tests ARV craft?
Possibly. I mean, we don't really know how consolidated those databases are, right? Because it does talk about, like, you know, I think the overall kind of structure of Immaculate Constellation is like a reporting, right? So like it gets these UFO reports, this raw data that's coming in, and it silos it mm-hmm. based on, you know, the imagery and kind of the intelligence that they have behind that. So, you know, does that database also include stuff pre-2017? Well, I don't really know. But what I will say is, within the Immaculate Constellation report, this 11-page report, it does talk about imagery and human intelligence reports. And the scope of that, the scope of those encounters goes back to 1991. So that's pre-2017. So, you know, does Immaculate Constellation have that pre-2017 data? Maybe. It just really depends on what this author of this document like had access to. And if it was all IC Immaculate Constellation stuff.
Maybe, but I've also asked some of my friends who are analysts in satellite industry, so they could look back to 1974 for the Koyama incident. They said, that's too far back. We have a cutoff.
Mm.
So I think for some of these space-based systems, that data is just not available.
Yeah.
But I also do think that the programs are, even between Army, Navy, and Air Force, probably the three largest legacy programs, that there's very little communication or cross-referencing between those programs. So it'd be interesting to find out who the witness of Schellenberger is and who ran the Immaculate Constellation program. It was said that this was an individual in the executive branch.
Mm-hmm. Possibly State Department.
Yeah, State Department. That's at least the witness, I think, Ross Coulthart has said.
I think so.
But, you know, I am of the mind that there are domestic ARVs that probably even the executive branch and Immaculate Constellation has no idea about.
Yeah, but also I think probably the most interesting part is that we do have foreign intelligence of foreign ARVs,
yeah.
And those are included within the Immaculate Constellation report, and we have imagery and videos of this stuff.
Specifically of the case that occurred over the Indo-Pacific region of a large black triangle, which, if that's the case, you know, we were just at the Spy Museum and we saw some imagery of China ripping off and reverse engineering a Predator drone. This would also mean that China ripped off and reverse engineered a TR-3D.
Hey, I do the same thing all the time.
Kermit, here's a question for you, sir.
Uh-huh.
There was some speculation regarding the involvement of Pacific architects and engineers outbidding OSAP for the Lockheed materials. Anything there?
That's
a great question.
Yeah, I've been referred to Pacific architects and engineers quite some times. As I understand it, they were later acquired by Lockheed Martin, I think. Yeah, I haven't really looked into it a ton. I know that they did become involved like post OSAP transfer, like that same timeline still exists. So very interesting, but I will say, I think it's a fairly small organization. Like it's mostly like an engineering consulting services group. That's I think less than 5,000 employees. I could be completely wrong here. But yeah, no, I know the name Pacific Architects. I don't know a ton about it, but yeah, I'll just nod my head and smile.
That just means follow-up research. So that's awesome, Sharpful. Trump could pardon anyone under UAP non-disclosure. I think amnesty should be
truth and reconciliation.
Yeah, truth. Unless it's like a person that has killed somebody for the sake of secrecy.
Yeah.
Like if these are I don't know. I don't even know if like the JSOC members in the 2004, if that's a true case, the blue-on-blue JSOC being killed by Lockheed Retrieval members, if that's a true case. Those guys are acting under strict orders, but I don't know if you're a Men in Black assassin trying to who visited Mark McCandless's house in 2021. I don't know how much you should receive amnesty.
It feels almost like it would be almost like a military version of a RICO case,
right?
It's like you have all these people working on these different programs, following orders, but at the end of the day, who's really making the decisions?
Yeah.
Right? So if you really want like full disclosure, truth and reconciliation, sending people to jail as well for, you know, illegal activity, I feel like the ultimate responsibility is like the people, you know, DepSec, whatever, that are in these high up positions making these orders, right? So who ultimately is responsible for that? I don't know. We don't know. We're still trying to figure that out.
Maybe it's Cheney. He should have been in jail a long time ago.
He probably sits at the top of the pyramid.
So Mace is a grifter. I'd like to get your opinion on this. I think she's more of just an opportunist who doesn't really understand maybe some context around UFOs and kind of the disinformation. Opportunists and grifters, if you want to call them that. So
I understand like calling grifter just from seeing the shirt. I totally understand it. But I okay, calling Mace a grifter.
I think it's just a poor taste of her.
Yeah, it's just poor. I think it's just poor taste. And honestly, I think it's probably like a staffer or something.
Yeah.
That's, hey, you know, we're trying to have some UFO branded merch out there so that, you know, our constituents know, you know, this is what we.
So Sawan, thank you again. You talked to a staffer at that the committee had heard about Schrock in his story. Not sure why he didn't testify. That
I was
interesting.
Thinking, yeah. Once I saw Schrock was going to talk at Seoul, I was assuming he was going to be one of the witnesses today. That was very surprising for me.
So one of the things at Seoul is there's some time for meet and greets and so forth, along with the Q and A. So we will, I promise you, try and pull Schrock for an interview. Mm-hmm. I would do anything for that. So we'll scroll down here. So this is talking a little bit. Throsey's talking a little bit more about Mace. They're selling, okay, a platform for fundraising for Republicans. But yes, bad taste. Okay, we all agree there. So here's a question or statement from Hokey. It would be interesting for you to talk with a lawyer in the military space. What are the potential legal mechanisms, 1950s era executive orders, DOE exceptions that could keep this hushed up? Ivan might be a good person to us for us to talk to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then also, at least in the legal financial area, right? Like there's a bunch of stuff in, you know, the SEC Act, the Code of Federal Regulations, that allow not just for like the president, but also like to your point, right? Department of Energy, they can provide, like the executive agencies can provide these exemptions specifically for corporations or people or agencies that are involved in, you know, above black or, you know, above board activities like that.
So I'm just trying to look at the questions, cause then we'll get back to the hearings. So Nell, I only heard from the Disclosure Mike account. And he was also talking about other witnesses, like firsthand triangle witnesses. So maybe his sources were a little bit behind. Maybe there was something that was supposed to happen. But no, I personally heard none of Nell supposing to have testified.
Yeah,
I'd like to hear him. Okay, sorry. Okay, a question about Michael. Does he know when he'll be able to go back to the black side? I do not know. I have no idea. Mike Gold used to work at Bigelow, and that wasn't mentioned in his bio. Also, NASA is I've ever worked for. NASA is not transparent. I can give you guys, I think I've talked about it multiple times, like in the Moon Dust video where NASA has lied. Anyone see SAIC took its biggest one-day loss today?
No.
You see that?
Actually? Did they post earnings? What's going on here?
I don't know. we'll let Kermit pull that up while I get a... Well, I get the next
the
question.
The one day
up.
We go run the streets looking at museums, the SAIC tanks. That's crazy.
How did I have such a great seat? I had a good friend who helped me get media for this. A really good friend I'm very thankful to. And so I owe all of that to that person. Have you guys read the 11-page paper? Yes, we are about to talk about it too once we finish up with the hearings as well. So, okay, let's see. Eli, shout out Event Horizon. Yes,
it's not just at SAIC. It's actually so what's going on with SAIC is actually being seen at Leidos, Amentum, and a couple other defense primes. It seems to be some type of uncertainty in the defense market at this current moment. I wonder what's causing that.
I'm just looking for triangles. I'm Sawan, thank you. You are given a lot of cash. Thank you so much, man. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Thank you as well, Jimmy Hsu. I'm looking for questions right now, guys. Yeah, I think I saw this as well to Douglas Dean Johnson. Kirkpatrick provided several points too. I don't know, debunk. I think he might have raised some interesting points. I haven't fully read what he said.
Yeah, so his belief, right, I think it's kind of just scrutinizing and assessing this document, right? So first off, this is written by somebody in the Department of Defense and then was approved by the Department of State Public Affairs. Kirkpatrick basically said in his response, this is completely bogus. This is completely made up. This isn't what happens. Not to mention, this 11-page document is not on any official letterhead. It does not seem to be any sort of like, you know, formalized or standard report, memo, otherwise that's coming out officially of an agency. This seems like, I don't know, like it could be somebody typing up this report. Is this somebody in the government? Is this somebody that's not in the government? You know, ultimately, you know, we don't really entirely know. But, you know, I think some of the things that we would expect from government documents are absent from this 11-page report. And then especially now that it's been entered into the congressional record, and everyone's kind of talking about it, it's like, obviously, the scrutiny has just increased.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did the panel get selected? Felt more like a variety show, which I agree with you. I have no idea how the panel got selected. All I know is that for this hearing, specifically from Burleson, as well as a person I talked to connected with the intelligence community at the UAPDF, there have been other instances where witnesses were intimidated almost like up to the time they were supposed to testify. So, you know, I'm not exactly sure the issues here, but I don't know how this was selected. I mean, I probably would have chosen a little bit of a different lineup or possibly even more witnesses, but you know, I'm not necessarily sure.
I felt like they did a good job just, again, kind of selecting a group of people that kind of represented different aspects kind of this. And you have like naval intelligence, you know, journalism, science. I thought that that was a pretty good mix of people.
Right. I do think the hearings were varied enough from last year's. However, we need firsthand, not firsthand experiencers, but firsthand whistleblowers involved.
Like touch the craft. You've been in the basement. You've seen
legacy,
the stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I don't know saying you've seen the stuff, mentioning the technologies and mentioning the locations would then be violating your special access programs that you've been read into in legacy. Yep. So the consequences for that would likely be severe.
Yeah. Catch 22.
And I imagine those are the type of people that would be told on their way to testify to turn back, or bad things will happen.
Yeah, that could be happening.
Cracker Jack, thank you so much for the 20. Big month. It is a big month. We got a lot of stuff, and we still got Seoul coming up.
Traveling across the country for UAPs.
So, sorry, I'm just looking at... Did you already talk about the Kuwait UAP that Schellenberger mentioned? Not yet, which we will. I'd also, in the report, which I thought was interesting, was the mention of the orbs flying circles around the F-22s, right?
Yep, and then also it, I think that same incident, the orbs escorted the F-22 out of the mission area.
Mm-hmm.
So like this pilot is on their way to do this mission, and then all of a sudden they get surrounded by orbs that are doing all these tricks around it, and then the orbs are like, get out. That is like, just as I was reading that report, I'm just trying to picture it for myself. I'm like, that's got to be terrifying. Yeah.
And that reminds me of the Donald Trump on JRE.
Yep.
Who talked about speaking to F-22 pilots who observed.
Specifically F-22.
Specifically F-22. So do those correlate? I don't think it's a stretch to say yes. William, I've been awesome, man. How are you doing? Sorry I've been a little dark between Jesse and this and Seoul. Had so much going on. I do have a project coming out, and it should be within the week, but I'm really excited. Really excited. Yes, we talked about this. It appears the report came from Corbell, not Schellenberger. A lot of drama around there. Schellenberger just had an interview with Jesse.
Mm.
I haven't had the opportunity to watch it yet, but I would like to see that. I would like to see that. So let me just look for questions here, guys, so then we'll keep talking. You guys asked so many great questions, especially the stuff
keep
for Kermit.
Coming.
So, yeah. Have you seen the Beyond Paradigm podcast with Putoff and Graves? Do you think that it's important that somebody who just worked with Putoff just testified? I have not seen the podcast with Putoff and Graves. Have you?
Mm-mm.
I would like to watch it though, because we got to meet Ryan Graves as well, and he's extremely kind.
Mm-hmm.
What's the chatter with the Grush op-ed? Well, Burleson will make some comments on it, but he thought the reason as to why the American public has not seen it yet was not his place to say. But he did have some comments on it, which pretty interesting. So, okay, perfect. Thank you for putting the question. How was the UAPDF dinner? Any key points there that caught your attention? Did congressional individuals and staffers show interest? Thank you.
Oh, no.
That's a perfect segue question. So Lester Nair, guys, you guys probably all know Lester Nair. If you don't, I'd really follow him. He's a member of UAP caucus, brilliant individual. This morning he tweeted, I have a lot of thoughts about yesterday. I'll just start with saying being here in person is like seeing the situation in full color. Watching only the hearings and not all the things happening in real life before and after around it is like watching it in black and white.
Black and white.
And this is a statement we've talked about. I couldn't agree more with. Guys,
absolutely.
The hearings were good. I loved the time there, but I was blown away by UAPDF. Seeing the House and congressional interest and support from both Republicans, Democrats, seeing the unity around some individuals, seeing members connected with the intelligence community. There were numerous staffers as well that we just talked about that Kermit and I connected with, a lot of business cards to speak to staffers who are really interested in the subject.
Mm-hmm.
And You know, I'll keep going on, but give me your thoughts on UAPDF.
Yeah. First off, I just want to say, Lester Nair, thank you kindly for letting us in. It was extraordinary just to be able to just be amongst, you know, everybody, and just have the opportunity just to be able to, you know, attend and get to talk to everybody. Yeah, I mean, pretty much, you know, a lot of the witnesses were there, a lot of people around them, Ryan Graves, who attended the hearings and was also at the UAPDF. And then some of the representatives, Senator Rounds gave the opening address and actually awarded Lou Elizondo a framed copy of the legislation
that was cool
to the NDAA last year, which I think that that speaks volumes to the support and just the persistence that Senator Rounds and these people in Congress have about really trying to get transparency and enacting legislation to get that.
And none of them are like none of them are kooky or dubious characters, as Greenstreet would say. Burleson went on stage, he said, guys, like, I've said this before, I'll say it again, I'm skeptic about everything, but you know, there's obvious blockages here from places outside of Congress, and you know, I want to get to the bottom of this, and so forth. So these guys are all saying that, you know, they don't have all the pieces, but they're pretty darn open-minded. We'll just say Burleson has not been at rest since Grush spoke last year. He has not been just relaxing and chilling. Neither has Burchett and other people. You know, we got the board of directors for the UAPDF, including Gary Nolan, Nell and Elizondo, the advisory board, Timothy Gallaudet, Chris Mellon, Kirk McConnell. Interesting about Chris Mellon, we went to the art museum today, and the Mellon family donated all of the best pieces there. So.
Substantially all, yeah.
And we got a document here, an actual picture of the six observables of UAP craft, including positive lift, hypersonic velocities, instantaneous acceleration, low observability, transmedium travel, and biological effects. But what I would just like to say about the UAPDF is there were some individuals there that I have wanted to connect to for a very long time that I finally got the chance to sit and speak with. And I couldn't be happier.
So do we want to talk about, I guess, our conversation with Leslie Kane?
Yeah. So we'll talk about Leslie Kane a little bit.
Yeah. How was that conversation?
So for the Brad Sorensen ARV project, analyzing emails and transcripts, I found one mention that between 2000 and 2003, Mark had sent Leslie Kane a copy of Fluxliner as drawn by Brad. And so I bring this up to Leslie Kane, and, you know, she couldn't remember it because at that time she was working with Greer. She didn't talk to McCandlish after like 2004 when she left with Greer, didn't know all about that. And so asked me to explain. And Leslie Kane kind of had no idea of the Brad Sorensen interview with Aviation Week and Space Technology.
Yeah.
And so, you know, her and I were talking for like 10 minutes straight. She was gobsmacked about the death threats from Sorensen. She couldn't believe it. But then she and I were talking about that. We were talking about the Edwards case and witness Kexberg, Ed Kexberg as well. And Leslie Kane is just one of the smartest, nicest people I've ever spoken to. There was a group of journalists nearby. I sat near them at the press conference, and they were kind of hounding around, really nice people, kind of wanting to get a picture of what was going on. Mm-hmm. So then afterwards, they talked to me for like 30 minutes on how I source methods. But Leslie Kane was so cool to talk to. She's so small and she's so cute with her like gray hair that's puffing out in every direction.
It was really fantastic just watching y'all both just going at it on Kexberg and Sorensen. It was like a meeting of the minds, and I was just blessed just to like sit and watch it, you know?
Because she stepped away from the case for a while. I think with a lot of journalists, and it makes sense, right? When you have to, you know, meet a quota for maybe a publication or some forth, at some point you got to step away from a case.
Yeah.
And so with Kexberg, you know, Kexberg, I think she hit a dead end, which I understand too, because I also told her about kind of Romanski and some of the FOIA dead ends with talking to his kids, who he mentioned on the Jim Montel show, were denied access to or told not to speak about Romanski. So in my opinion, Kexberg has hit somewhat of a dead end, but you know, her eyes kind of lit up when I told her about the Sorensen stuff, because, you know, that case really is alive and well, especially with ARV and Immaculate Constellation.
But yeah, I mean, it's made the news cycle yet again. And as we know, this the McCandlish Sorensen story is one of the original like sources of the ARV reproduction vehicle concept. So, you know, if we really want to understand the ARV and the RV, man, like we need to drag people in and start getting them to testify.
Well, and I really need to stress this. because I think Corbell and Knapp discussed this as well as some others. The term, ARB did not originate with Greer. This UFO researcher, Bill Hamilton, was the first person to ever speak about ARB. And this term was given to him by Brad and Bill Scott. And in 1991, he was the first one to publish the term ARB to text unrelated to this story. I think he made a misprint here. He called it an alien replicated vehicle, not alien reproduction vehicle, but used the term ARV. And so in my tweet where I kind of called out Schellenberger a little bit for saying, hey, why did you take this out? Is because ARV is not attributing alien and extraterrestrials to this vehicle. ARV is the specific term. It's like the brand name, like Sprite to lemon lime soda, that Brad Sorensen was told by the individual showing off the craft at Norton Air Force Base, which is a story I believe to be true. ARV specifically was said, these are alien reproduction vehicles. So, you know, by saying alien reproduction vehicle, it's not just extraterrestrial. It's a, I hate to use this word because I think it's overused, but it is a kind of a nuanced term, right?
Yeah.
But so Leslie Kane, I'm sending her some of the ARV stuff and she and I are going to get cracking and talk a little bit more about that. So
it's exciting.
You know, if I could get her on the show or talk to her, because we were waiting for like 20 minutes to speak to her. There were some Chatty Cathy speaking to her right before we got up. And it's okay. I mean, for some people like us, it's a little shocking to be in kind of a mixer with some of the people we were around with.
Yeah, I would say overall, it just felt very surreal. I mean, for me, you know, this is, I guess, the first time I've come out. I'm like, hey, I'm Kermit, I'm Frog Embodiers or whatever. And then also just seeing a lot of people that I've been like following and talking with, like on Twitter, Reddit, you know, all these different social media platforms, and then seeing a lot of those people in person, and then like, you know, the UAPDF party, it's like, you know, we were kind of worried if we were going to get in or not. Yeah. It was all this, you know, kind of anxiety about it. And then just being in the room, it was like, at first part, I was just like anxious because I'm like, geez, like I'm so out of place. But I also just felt like just so happy and just so blessed just to like have that experience.
Everybody there was brilliant. Everybody there had something to offer and talk about. And it was just a really special group of people.
Absolutely.
It was really darn cool.
Absolutely.
And it was really cool. We got to talk to James Fox quite a bit as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Really excited for the program. We get to see that next week at Seoul. But James Fox is one cool dude.
Out on Apple TV December 15th.
I think so. He is one cool dude, guys. James Fox is awesome to talk to.
Yep. We talked a lot about that, and then also just going to Seoul and, you know, just his work with Virginia a little bit as well. So fantastic guy. I would say a lot of the people that we met yesterday were very nice. You know, they very interested in talking to us and learning from our perspective and our experience and kind of like, you know, our reason, our why of like being in this topic. So
I found it pretty cool because I find as like a content creator in this sphere, there's a lot of hoarding of information, I would say, and kind of unwillingness to share and collaborate. So being around this group of people who are just so willing to speak and talk was really cool. So, you know, so many people ask me like, who do I work for? Just say nobody. I work for myself.
Yeah, I work for myself. I'm just here because I'm intellectually curious about aliens.
Yeah. Like, so, some people would kind of give a look, but like, really?
Yeah.
Like Burleson asked me that. And I just know, like I'm self-published. I just create documentaries. And so that was really cool, guys. I'm on a first name basis with Rep Burleson. Did you notice the witnesses were as nervous in person as they appeared on TV? I understand it's a nerve-wracking situation, but they seem very nervous. To me, they did not look nervous at all. The most nervous person was Jeremy Corbell.
I wasn't in the room, so I wouldn't know. I will say, I mean, they didn't seem nervous, at least when I got to meet a lot of them at the UAPDF. You know, if these people are all engaged in some massive psychological operation, they're doing a really, really good job of it because it did not seem like they were engaged in fraud or anything like that.
And I think Michael Gold had one heck of a time because he was just kind of eating candy the whole time. And then afterwards, I got to speak to him and he was like all smiles that he got to talk. So, you know, it's always nice meeting the men behind the mics and talking to these people. I mean, this certainly, I had been a little harsh, I think, on Lou lately with some of the presentation stuff and just sort of the questions that still remain and are really valid about his background, as well as his work at CIFA, the Counterintelligence Field Activity. But, you know, meeting and talking these people was really great.
Yeah.
So, yes, okay. Wildest part was people reporting loss of time and feelings of unease. Yes. Let's remember the story of Jonathan Weygandt, who in 1997 in Peru, when he and his fellow Marines allegedly found a crashed saucer, as they got within close proximity, they felt like intense fear and unease.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, if the infographics whistleblower story is true, crash retrieval operators have to have grounding mechanisms yep. because your cognition is so affected.
Well, it's I've heard from other people's experiences as well that loss of time is actually quite common.
Yeah.
I think there's something to do with like the warping of gravity and time and just like how that affects like our perception. That definitely tracks. There's another point I was going to say to that, but I'm completely blanking on it.
Is it about fear or?
Fear. Oh, actually what I was going to say is, you know, actually the loss of time is also featured in the X-Files too. Mm-hmm. Whenever, Fox Mulder, whenever he has these, encounters, if he sees a, you know, extraterrestrial vehicle, he'll check his watch because he's trying to see if the, you know, the timer's gone. So I don't know. I started watching the X-Files after I really started getting into UAPs and I'm like, interesting. Like, this is talking about, this is a lot of the stuff I've been like researching. Yeah. This is a little X-Files on the nose.
Is a bit like, what's going on? And I'll talk about one very specific thing in the X-Files in my next video. How much of the UAP topic occupies your daily life researching, editing? If I'm not with the girlfriend, talking to Kermit on the phone, training jujitsu, lifting weights, or doing other work, I'm doing this. So,
and I know you didn't ask me, but what I will say is it's probably... It is my intellectual curiosity. So after work, after dinner, after I'm done hanging out with my friends and watching Instagram reels, I'm scrolling the CIA's reading room and the Navy's reading room as well.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I'll say if I'm not, this takes up probably most of my time outside the lady. I always have like 9 or 10 PDFs I'm reading. Escape Velocity, thank you so much. This is for our. Oh, thank you. Let's catch up soon. Absolutely. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it a lot. And yes, sorry I missed your call today. It's been hectic as it's been very hectic, dude. But thank you so much. Levi, it was nice to meet you too, man. Wanted to ask if you got any impressions hearing Round speak if the UAPDA would be reintroduced independently. I wouldn't be surprised he mentioned it.
There seems to be very strong support.
Yeah,
to reintroduce.
There seems
that.
To be a little bit of spite that it wasn't passed.
Yeah, he seemed pretty unhappy.
So it was mentioned a lot. So Juan, thank you again, dude. Holy cow! Do you believe SSCI knows some UAPs are NHI and are aware of the Legacy program?
Senate probably.
Yeah,
Senate probably.
Especially
House. Yeah. I think like a House is really still trying to get answers on this. But as far as we know, Senate has been on this trail. Like they had almost a 6 month to a year head start over the House in their investigations. Yeah. That's at least what I was told.
Okay, this is a good question. What alleged NHI technology would you both like to most know everything about? Thanks. I would like to, that's actually a tough one. I've grappled with this question a lot. So I'll let you go first, Kermit.
You just throw me the
Yeah, you go first, man.
I think the electrogravity is probably the first thing I want to look at. I just want to know like if it was actually a thing, you know. Also, just by the way, like come on. So the B2, I don't know if you guys know this. But the B2 has a technology on board. I think it's called the inertial mass reduction device, mm-hmm. something like that. Basically, it uses like electromagnetic, like high voltage electricity through the wings to reduce the weight of the airframe. So it's like less heavy in the air. So it's a little bit more maneuverable. I just think that's very interesting, you know?
Up to, I think.
And that's basically electrogravity if you want to kind of think about it like that. I mean, I'm not a scientist. I'm an accountant. But that's probably one of the first things I would be interested in. I'd say novel propulsion and then energy would be the next mm-hmm. one. Like how is that propulsion like being energized? That's kind of one and two for me.
So specific technology, because I can't really go with the craft. I would like to know about the piece of technology that RA described that was the weapons technology.
The tablet?
Yes, that was showing mm-hmm. the symbology. He didn't know if it was in his head or not. So that would be one of mine. Sorry, getting through these and I'm going through. Thank you, Wilby Milo. Pretty impressive. You are pretty impressive. Thank you so much. And Sawan, again, thank you, dude. Holy cow.
Gerb and Chris Sharp collab would go insane.
Well, you know, Chris Sharp wasn't there, but I got to make a heck of a lot of connections. So I would love to talk crash retrievals with Sharp. In fact, I'd like to meet him in person. So, maybe we'll get a London trip going in because I'd really like to meet him.
UAPs across the pond.
So JC was not testifying. That is an interesting observation. Why would he be nervous? I don't know, but he just, when I was talking to him before the hearings, he was just like, okay, now I need to center myself a little bit. So,
oh, okay. I didn't know what JC was at first.
Did you talk with anyone about remote viewing? Yeah, quite a bit. Specifically, Chris from Area 52 channel. He's really cool, by the way. You got to talk to him too from Area 52. Mm-hmm. He actually says he has had experience with remote viewing. So I'm going to link up and talk with him and, see if he can do some sort of demonstrations or proof of concept. Because, I'm sure you feel kind of the same way as me, but this is one of the toughest things for me to wrap my head around and grapple just because I'm so unfamiliar with the topic.
Yeah. The only time it was really discussed was kind of talking about like Ed May's work in the 1990s and how that got transferred into the certain private corporation that we're interested in.
Was it Mace or Luna that also talked about craft flown with mind?
Mind body. That
mind
was
craft connection.
Luna, I think, was mind body. Yeah, she said it was a mind body connection.
That was interesting.
That was very interesting.
Okay, this is just a comment. Diana Pasulka said on a pod, Tim Taylor, aka Tyler, told her X Files had real consultants from the program.
Yep.
Yeah, I would agree with this. Holy crap, Snapple, thank you so much. BJJ practitioners, where do you train? I mean, that is just so kind of you. Thank you. I'll be sharing this loot with my boy Kermit here. Thank you so much. Sorry, I'm just looking at, okay, questions. Yes, thank you guys. What actions moving forward are you guys looking for Congress to take, and what would indicate action on the information to discussed in
like
this hearing?
I like this.
Yeah, that's a great question. For me specifically, what actions moving forward, witnesses need to be subpoenaed. And this needs to be done in a setting outside of Arrow. I spoke with Burleson about this, and there are witnesses, I have talked about publicly and not publicly that information has been passed on for him to get subpoenaed.
Yeah. I feel like the more interesting people to talk to at this point are the ones that are not going to be super cooperative, because I think a majority of them are probably a little bit more in the know than people that are more transparent about this. That's just my take on this. I also want to see Congress like actually investigating the forensic audit trail. I want them either getting a GAO audit done, a DOGE audit, this Department of Government Efficiency stuff, or I want them to start making progress on figuring out like how the funding is happening and if there's taxpayer dollars or private money that's involved, because I think ultimately I think the American people deserve to know, and the Congress people themselves said it multiple times, like, we are going to find out about this. Mm-hmm. So that's something I want them desperately to follow up on.
So I think this is a good question. Why do you think we haven't seen any new evidence like videos or pics? And of course you could reference, why a lot of people I think are kind of disappointed there wasn't such evidence shown at the hearings. I however think the info here is a little bit more complicated, because if we're talking about Immaculate Constellation, for example, and some of the imagery there, Kermit talked about this earlier, but it's not like a satellite feeds are giving you, a steady 4K recording picture. Mm-hmm. No, you're given data. You're just given streams of data. And I think anomalies are noticed in the data for objects in picture, or there's various conditions to kind of identify what the satellite systems for NRO and NGA and stuff are looking at. So at this point, this data is filtered, and if it's picked up by Immaculate Constellation and so forth, it's siloed away quickly.
Yeah. And another thing I'll add as well is, if you're just looking at Arrow, right, and you're looking at the progress that Arrow's made, by the way, they just released a new report, a historical records report, where they talked about some of the new cases and morphology and the progress that Arrow's been making. I like the report. I'm curious to know what the chat's thoughts are this evening about that as well. But what I will say is, Arrow has indicated they are building more instrument platforms. And so I think as they're starting to build, I think it was called the Gremlin system, hyperspectral imagery. Like as these offices and as other organizations start to, parse that data and they start to look at that and, they can take intelligence from it, they can scrub it to make sure there's no classified information, I think we're going to start to see that going forward. But I think it's really just been the instruments, like the technology to see this stuff. It's just had to catch up recently.
And then somebody asked the question and you relate it, which is a good question. If Sean Kirkpatrick saw no thought all UAP was prosaic. Why had these gremlin systems and advanced sensory data have been introduced?
That was a random question from a random person on Twitter, but I thought it was a very, very good question, because it's like, you know, Kirkpatrick, when he was running Arrow, he kind of had the mainline narrative of like, you know, most, if not all UAP are prosaic. The people that are witnesses are either misinformed or they're providing disinformation to Congress for their own financial benefit, whatever. But at the same breath, it's like, okay, Kirkpatrick, you're saying UFOs aren't real, but you're spending a bunch of money on like cameras that can look at things that aren't visible to the human eye. Like, and why?
And speaking of Kirkpatrick, I thought it was mighty funny to see Tim kind of go after Kirkpatrick in both his testimony and congressional submission, and Kirkpatrick kind of fire back like it was a high school drama.
Yeah.
Saying like, oh, he's just mad I didn't hire him. Kirkpatrick is so hot under the collar. You know, I'm sure everybody here has seen his interview on Event Horizon. Kirkpatrick is just, he never makes himself look good.
Well, let's not forget his LinkedIn letter after the Grush hearing that posted the same day after the multi-decade crash.
He was so petty with Grush.
Yeah.
So Area 52 has been going over the 4chan leak from last year. Very interesting stuff. What are your thoughts on it? My thoughts are I plan to make a full video about it, because there's just a lot of interesting tidbits. So
The 4chan leaker?
Yeah, the 4chan leaker, if nobody knows, it's an alleged testimony off of 4chan, which, you know, of course is going to raise some red flags, because 4chan's kind of just a place for a lot of self-deprecating, funny people to post about wild stuff. But the theory behind this is that there's basically a hamburger-shaped self-replicating craft that patrols our ocean, non-human, that custom builds UAP for specific mission purposes. And this is part of the reason that crashes occur and thus retrievals, because this specific facility generally doesn't care what happens to its used up product.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's because the UFOs that the UFOs that are coming from this area, whatever this craft is, they seem to be just built for spec.
It's almost
disposable, right? So sometimes these things aren't perfectly built, they crash, and then we pick it up. My take on it is that story is very interesting, and it sounds like something the United States Navy would be very interested in doing, but I'll say no more.
So William says, do you think it will be different on the issues of UFOs now that Trump is president? Absolutely. I personally do. Just because I think part of it, he has spoken about UFOs openly, so I think he'll be more receptive, and reporters and media will be more interested to ask him. And I think with some of the people he's positioned in power might be far more willing to work with him. You know, we'll see how Marco Rubio works with Trump. Trump used to call him Little Marco in the
2016. but I feel like that was a lot of just political swagger of, you know, he's just trying to beat Rubio in the election. I don't think he holds that against him. You know, he's just teasing him. I don't know. But I will say Trump has indicated that he's not just like, he's not only interested in like getting disclosure about UAPs, but also like the JFK records, 9/11, all these other kind of issues and things that we've been talking about in terms of like improper government oversight or possible malfeasance. Mm-hmm. He wants truth on not just UAPs, just like truth in general.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea of what we're going to see the next 4 years.
So Shardful, what are your thoughts on Boebert talking about the rumors on the Hill about DOD involved in genetic manipulation?
It's very interesting.
First of all, I thought her line of speaking, I understand her, you know, a lot of people right after election want to bring some political jargon into something, but I thought her talking about the last election and so forth was a little bit of poor taste. You know, it's already difficult to get the subject taken seriously, so you want questions as directed and purposeful as possible, you know, talking about birds being drones.
Birds aren't real. Yeah, like when you say that, it's just you're making it disingenuous, and it honestly, like, it felt like the lines of questioning prior to Boebert taking the stage, it was like, it was very good, it was leading somewhere, there's some very interesting things, and then all of a sudden Boebert gets up and is like, birds aren't real, and Biden got 81 million votes, and it felt for a brief moment like the air was kind of like sucked out, and the energy was kind of sucked out for a minute.
And you know, maybe there is some interesting research to be done about genetic manipulation, but now that she said that, that's associated with conspiracies like birds.
Yeah, but it makes you wonder, like, okay, Boebert is at least aware of this, but is the other part of the UAP caucus, like, is Burleson, is Burchett, is Moskowitz, is Luna, you know, the guys that we know on the Hill that are interested in this, are they also hearing about this too? Because I know Coltart, he speculated on his live stream. I don't know, speculation, but kind of saying like, watch the space a little bit, because it seems that there are possibly credible allegations about a hybridization program that have reached Congress, and that might be something that will be talked about in further hearings.
That's, I think, GS15 John Ramirez has talked about that on public forums as well.
I
can't quite remember, but TruthSaw says, who specifically would you subpoena to testify? One, Ed from Edwards. Two and three, I can't necessarily say. What about you, Kermit?
Probably Deputy Secretary David Turk of the Department of Energy.
We walked by the DOE today.
We walked by the Forrestal building. We took pictures outside the James Forrestal Department of Energy building today, chat. It was a great time. I would subpoena, definitely, without naming names, some folks in the Air Force that oversee experimental test wings at Edwards, and the deputy director of, sorry, the director of Global Access, Office of Global Access. Those would be my top three.
Or thank you so much for the 50s. This is for my boys, 10 and 12. Well, thank you. That's extremely nice. Role model and inspiration. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the kind words, and also extend those same courtesies to Kermit, because he is killing it. You're getting a lot of love on this show too, man. Thank you so much. Falconhead, do you think Avi Loeb is an ally or not? Yes, I have friends who speak extremely highly of Avi and are trying to kind of maybe facilitate a meeting with himself and me. I'd really like to talk to him. Do you have any thoughts on Avi?
I think he's doing a really, really good thing. I think it's so great that, like, you know, the same organization that, you know, John Mack was a part of, and there was a lot of issues there, like with his internal review. Now Harvard is kind of supporting Avi Loeb, you know, having a more serious inquiry into
that was with the light craft, right?
I believe, maybe.
I don't know. I don't know.
I'm just saying, kind of just in generally, like, just kind of looking at how Harvard kind of treats their staff is like they're a little bit more open to Avi having this discussion versus how they were with Mac, you know, decades ago.
I would, my take. I think very highly of Avi. Remember when James Clapper lied about mass surveillance to the Congress and nothing happened? Yes. It seems like that's talked about quite a lot.
They lie about a bunch of stuff.
Okay. Sorry guys. Just looking for some
chat
questions.
Crazy.
I know. Yeah. The chat here is always excellent. Excellent. That's why I'm trying to look specifically for questions, because
y'all are awesome.
Just because there's a lot of good discussion. Carl Nell and Admiral Wilson. Yeah, that's another. Oh, what do I think of the work Jesse Michaels is doing? I think Jesse's fantastic, and he's one of the best voices in the space. You know, I've got to grow to be friends with him over the last couple of months, and of course, hang out with him in person. And Jesse's wonderful, and he is really, really, really driven to make change in this field.
He's a very solid person.
And Jesse's just got his own style too, man. We talked about this earlier, but nobody else could show up to the hearings in just like a more laxed fit. If anybody did it but Jesse, they would look a bit strange. Okay, so I think, okay, so we're towards the end now. So keep submitting those questions. Otherwise, we'll just keep chatting about the Immaculate Constellation Report, which we'll get into. You'd go with the DOE people too. And former CIA Office of Global Access. Yeah, Gaffney would be good. However, I think the names from Wilson Davis, the senior review group, and specifically would be very good.
I would subpoena the SecDefs from the 90s. Like, yeah. Perry, I think Perry was one of them that was talked about who might have had purview, because I think he was Undersecretary of Research and Development for DOD. Mm-hmm. So he would have probably had purview in the early 90s, late 80s.
So we're at a little bit of a good point in the questions now. You want to talk a little bit about the Immaculate Constellation Report?
Absolutely.
Because so there's one report that you have kind of been mulling over in your head a lot. Can you tell us about that case? And
absolutely.
Here's the iPad. We got it up right there.
So for those of you guys following at home, we're talking about specifically the cases in Section 2, the U.S. government imagery intelligence.
Let me pull up a second screen. How about that?
Okay.
Wait. And while we do that,
I can have it right here.
Okay. We got Max Barr. Thank you, Max. Barr is a good friend of both of us.
How's it going, sir?
Yeah. Now that we have ARVs mentioned in Immaculate Constellation, the time is nigh. I got to say, I am thrilled that the term ARV is fully in the report. I think that's excellent.
Yeah, just quickly read it. So something that, you know, just reading all these different reports and the examples of just the imagery intelligence that's included within the database of Immaculate Constellation, I'll say a lot of these reports are very interesting and eye-opening. But there's one that I'm very interested to see if we can get either a FOIA request or like any sort of follow-up on this, because this would seem like a crazy video, okay? Let me just read the description. On U.S. government networks, there exists OPIR footage of a large saucer-shaped UAP emerging from within a dense cloud formation. The saucer registered black hot against white cold, with atmospheric disturbances caused by the saucer-shaped UAP visible. The saucer was between 200 to 400 meters in circumference and displayed symmetrical concavities on the upper surface. So I think like a dome on top. After breaking above the cloud cover, the saucer-shaped UAP suddenly reverses its direction, descending partially back into the cloud cover, then accelerating rapidly out of frame and partially obscured by the cloud tops. This behavior was evasive in nature and implied that the saucer-shaped UAP had become aware that it was under observation by a space-based collection platform. Now, when I read that, I'm like, just like, I'm picturing this and, you know, I'm kind of thinking about the movie Nope, which was by
Jordan Peele.
And it's a, you know, horror movie with like a alien vehicle that's like living and it eats people, whatever. But the common theme of that movie is like, you know, it's in a cloud. It's this white vehicle that's like in this cloud. And as I'm like picturing it, I can almost see it. It was just this giant saucer. It's like coming in and out of the clouds. Mm. And it's, you know, as we also talk about, you know, reporting and trying to identify UAP, it seems that these things are either manipulating or, you know, changing their kind of imagery or like how they present themselves so that we're not aware of them, or they're just trying to conceal their nature. So like this disc flying like in the clouds because it doesn't want to be seen by a satellite, like that's kind of crazy. And then further, like what's the video here? Is this like a video from the ground, from a helicopter?
Yeah, from ground or satellite imagery.
I don't know. But I think that would be a very interesting video to get out in the public.
Now, can you tell us about the Indo-Pacific mention where ARV is mentioned, please?
Yes. So talking about foreign reproduction vehicles. On U.S. government networks, there exists infrared footage of and imagery of a grouping of vessels engaged in SIGINT, signals intelligence, and MASINT, which is measurement intelligence?
I believe so.
Keep reading that.
I know we looked this up.
SIGINT and MASINT collection at night in a specific area of the Pacific Ocean. Naming names.
Measurement
in this footage, which was in close proximity to the vessels, a large equilateral triangle UAP suddenly appears directly over the ships. The three bright points are seen at each bottom corner of the UAP, which is observed to slowly rotate on its horizontal axis. This rotation partially revealed a horizontal bar of sweeping lights. Intelligence analysis associated with this event specifies that the equilateral triangle is a reproduction vehicle and concludes that the vessels must have been made aware of the RV's frequent use of these coordinates due to foreign prepositioning of advanced collection assets at the exact time and place. After a brief period of hovering and slowly rotating approximately 500 to 1,000 meters above the ocean, the RV suddenly disappears and the footage ends. Just ominous. And it's like, again, we're talking, we've heard from individuals, Elizondo, whistleblowers, that there are imagery, there's videos and images that exist on U.S. government networks. But a lot of these videos, especially in this case, this was taken in what we would call a denied area, right? Mm-hmm. Like this is an intelligence surveillance platform that we have in a foreign area that we're using to collect intelligence on our foreign adversaries and others, right? And so releasing that publicly would be a little bit controversial,
dicey,
you know? Because,
yeah.
Okay, first off, yeah, we have the equilateral triangle UAP, but then also potentially we might be doxing another country's legacy program.
And this would be China in this instance, based on the relative proximity, which this is one of the greatest questions. Are China and Russia are our adversaries, as kind of discussed by some people like David Grush? How much success have they made in their legacy programs? You know, Grush has said we're in a decades-long Cold War with our adversaries. Did they rip off a TRS-3B triangle? It's really, really interesting. And I find it interesting that the term ARV/RV is used too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just alien reproduction vehicle, but also reproduction vehicle I'm happy that distinction was made, because reproduction vehicle could just mean a reverse engineered MiG jet or something.
But okay, and forgive me for speculating here on the live stream, but what if, you know, alien reproduction vehicle and reproduction vehicle kind of leaves out the possibility that we have reproduction vehicles that we wouldn't necessarily call alien, okay? In the sense of, like, you know, there's potentially objects that are coming extraterrestrially, which we would consider, you know, general or traditional aliens, or is there stuff that's coming interdimensional or within our oceans, or, you know, some, you know, coming in and out of our existence. We could call that alien, or we could call it something else, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, what we're trying to copy, it's a reproduction vehicle.
Right.
So
I thought this instance was interesting as well, due to just a one sentence. So Southcom Tic Tac detected by space asset in proximity of vessel. On USG networks, there exists OPIR imagery of mass int of a Tic Tac UAP transmitting through an area of the Atlantic Ocean. The Tic Tac maneuvers at an altitude at or near local cloud coverage, and correlated electromagnetic signatures were collected by MASINT. In the available footage, the Tic Tac UAP transits rapidly through the field of regard as it transits the ocean. No observation reaction is seen to come from the vessel, but its proximity in space and in time and space to the trajectory of this UAP suggests foreknowledge of the UAP event by intelligence. So what's interesting to me that there is, so Magnetic Constellation is just kind of accessing these intelligence databases to collect records and so mm-hmm. forth. So, you know, who is the intelligence organization behind shooting this video if they had forewarned knowledge of this UAP incursion event and thus were kind of predicting its movements? Would this be a satellite system? You know, I don't think it's too far of a stretch to think some of these sightings may be conducted by NRO and NGA, Grush's positions, who have satellite systems that actually can detect and track some of these vehicles.
Yeah, and just knowing kind of how, just, I mean, I've never worked in government or military intelligence, but just briefly how that kind of works is, you know, I think that they're trying to get multiple signatures of the same object, like, mm-hmm. right, it's one thing just to get a satellite, but then also, like, you know, ground sensor, camera, underwater sensor, you know, a second kind of corroborative source to verify, you know, that this thing is existing, it's real. You know, they're tracking it usually on more than one kind of instrument.
And let's talk a little bit about the morphologies, right? So we're using a data set from 1991 to 2002. I just like to talk about the morphologies just because it's so interesting. Within the irregular shapes, of course, the jellyfish are floating brains with appendages.
Where have we seen that one
before? Mentioned. Yeah, exactly. And there's also another mention in the report about, I think it's the Mexican border of a jellyfish, which we'll talk about too, but sphere or orb. So of course, Arrow had reported on this as well, including some old data in Blue Book and so forth. Spheres were the most reported shape, with variations ranging from smooth featureless orbs to spheres with visible openings or appendages. These objects' prevalence suggests a possible standard in UAP design or function, capable of high maneuverability and speed. The diversity within the sphere category, spanning from simple, polished appearances to more complex structures with appendages, suggests a broad range of purposes or technologies unique to the platform's mission and or the originator. The mention of appendages on spheres instead of a ubiquitous smooth shape reminds me of the 2010 San Diego sphere sighting. Have you heard of that?
I don't think so, no.
It's a long video. It's about a 12-minute video of a sphere that has what you would describe as almost an antenna around the circumference. And so that is one really interesting sighting. Disc or saucer. Saucer-shaped UAPs reported with and without domes. If you want to look that up, go to the It's Redacted YouTube channel.
Okay.
This was posted a couple years ago, and maybe we can hold an image up to the screen. They have the full video.
Got it.
Saucer-shaped UAPs reported with and without domes were the second most common shape reported. Flat saucers were reported as well, these being disc-like objects without pronounced domes. Trilateral biconvex UAPs are also reported in the data. So I think in the Aero historical reporting trends in 2022, the saucer shapes were not featured as one of the most common sightings. So I could be wrong there, but that is a, did you see it?
No, I was just making a quick note for myself.
Okay, let me pull it up.
I can pull it up if you want.
I'll pull it up. You, why don't you read us about Oval and Tic Tac and bring up some interesting stuff there, didn't Kirkpatrick imply that the Tic Tac may have been human technology?
Did Kirkpatrick say that? I don't know, maybe. Oval or Tic Tac, oval-shaped UAPs were infrequently reported within the data set, and only after approximately 2003, these UAPs either maintained a uniform egg-like symmetry, occasionally tempered into a teardrop shape. Cylinders with convex ends, Tic Tacs, fall into this category, and occasionally feature visible protuberances on the top or bottom of the otherwise uniform plan form.
So that'd be like the Fravor incident, right, with the almost kind of... features on the bottom of the craft.
Mm-hmm.
So let me pull this up because this is a really...
I think, yeah. I've seen that photo before.
So this is what I think of when I hear sphere and some of the appendages. You guys may have, you may have heard of the sighting that's 2000, I can't remember the year, San Diego sphere.
Yep.
The YouTube channel, it's long been defunct, but it's fantastic. It's Redacted has a video on the entire sighting. Will you read off the triangle description? Because there's an interesting point I want to touch on there.
So triangles were among the rarest UAPs reported in the data. Most of these sightings were equilateral triangles, occasionally with vertical stabilizers visible on the top of the UAP. Elongated isosceles types were also reported, occasionally with the same vertical stabilizers observed on the equilateral type.
So the vertical stabilizers is an interesting point. Conventional triangle design, such as the, you know, what you would call the TR-3B, does not feature this. If you look at some other similar designs, like the alleged TR-3A Astra or so forth, or even that video Tom DeLonge likes to champion, it's that green UFO video at night. One thing I noticed about that triangle is it has stabilizers on top. So I've always tried to reference that because that sort of looks similar to like the X-43 unmanned NASA craft and so forth. So that's a pretty darn interesting.
Yeah.
All right. What are you looking at now in the report? Sorry, we're kind of bouncing back and forth between the report, but you know, I thought it was important for all of us to talk about it. And anything that stood out to you guys, just leave in the comments. Any questions, especially, just let us know about the question.
Yeah, I will say, just like looking at these different types and just kind of thinking about, you know, the different reports that's kind of being summarized in here, right? Like spheres are, you know, the most common, but they're also kind of the smallest.
Mm-hmm.
And then triangles are the rarest, but they can be anywhere from an F-16 to a size of a football field.
Doesn't it say 600 feet as well? Or no, 600 feet is from other avenues of research. Never mind.
Beliefs, yeah.
It's like football field size.
Yeah, because football field is
300 feet. Up to two football feet in length. I think the distinction between equilateral and isosceles triangle is important as well. As far as all research I've done into human-made triangles, most of them seem equilaterally shaped. There's only a handful of cases dating back to the late 80s, early 90s, and early 2000s of isosceles kind of shaped triangles.
Well, we also have not just triangles, but we also have boomerang or arrowhead.
Yeah, think of the Phoenix Lights, or think of the testimony of the man who testified at Stephen Greer's NPC, Stephen Digna, who talked about being at a bombing range in... before he left the service due to his health, and Raytheon contractors basically facilitating a boomerang-shaped craft that was projecting something that came onto the range. That's an interesting testimony I'd like to revisit.
Yeah, and then also just a lot of the atmospheric or kind of unique emissions and behavior seen by a lot of these is we see, you know, loss of time, visual disturbances, feelings of unease or anxiety. Electronic device malfunction. So,
and I mean, think Kevin Knuth at Seoul last year gave the best examples of electromagnetic distortion magnetic distortion. I highly recommend checking that out.
I did watch that. That was really
very good.
Very good. Yep.
What about the organic shapes? Because I think that is probably one of the most interesting thing for many people.
Yep. Irregularly shaped UAPs, those that defy simple geometric description, were among the rarest reported sightings. Shape-shifting UAPs also appear in the data set, typically having a spherical or disc-like base form from which irregular geometries are seen to project. Floating brain or jellyfish UAPs are present as well, characterized by a central mass from which multiple arms or spars hang downward. Finally, combined shapes were also observed, including cubes within spheres, ringed saucers, and various rectangular and cuboid forms.
The cuboid form, of course, that's interesting, calling back to Ryan Graves.
Mm-hmm. Cube within a sphere is also one of those sightings as well.
Specific mention of brain is very interesting to me specifically. The two don't really correlate, but I often think back to the physics concept of Boltzmann brain. The idea behind a Boltzmann brain from physicists, can't remember his name, Boltzmann, but it'd be far more efficient rather than an existing universe with matter for just a combination of electric charged particles forming a brain drifting through space, thinking of the material universe. And I just think of that for the brain shape.
Yeah. And something else just to kind of point out that might be interesting is in terms of unique emissions, what we see with these irregular or organics is that we see a temperature drop associated with these. And we don't really see that reported with the other morphologies, which is interesting.
I'd be interested if there's transmedial sighting or footage of these organic shapes, if there's also a temperature drop and temperature gradient as it may enter sea or other domain, right? Or variable temperatures. That'd be kind of interesting to see the heat signature and how it alters over the course of its flight. Mm-hmm. If perhaps when it moves faster, it heats up and so forth. Of course, we're not privy to any of this information, but
yeah,
we got our public report on our hands.
Yep. Well, I think someone in the chat mentioned earlier Oak Shannon.
Yep.
And I think this was a very, very interesting kind of little tidbit in this document here. For Section 5, Restricted U.S. Government Historical Records, there is a call out to a specific, it's a serial number that corresponds to an official NSA report published in 1978, which people have now confirmed was included, this specific citation was included in Oak Shannon's notes, which is very interesting.
The specific notes, I'm trying to remember the actual event, I've referenced it a few times. The specific event, it may have been at Los Alamos National Labs, where Oak Shannon took notes from some detailed speakers. I referenced here when Oak Shannon relayed information he was told about an undersea base, a USO base.
And yeah.
So he writes about that. He writes about a connection to possible MHD propulsion physics with, I think, a 3.5 gigahertz range. Numerous interesting notes about programs. I think he mentions Bobby Ray Inman in that. That's just off the top of my head. But these notes are for a panel of speakers that I think was at Los Alamos in the late 80s.
Yep. And then just to add about this report as well. The substance of the report concerns scientific research in the Soviet Union on the topics of parapsychology, psi, and biological effects on UAPs on human beings. Additionally, the existence of this reporting stream demonstrates that U.S. intelligence was explicitly tasked to collect on foreign entities active in areas often relegated to the fringes of scientific research, including parapsychology and the biological effects of encounters with UAP.
And this shouldn't be surprising, guys. Even people who are kind of uncomfortable with the idea of psi, like myself, it's pretty new to them. Let's think back to the NSWC Crane project, in which, you know, not only SAIC, but the Project Stargate, which was researching the psi phenomena from SRI and the CIA, but even in 2011 and onward, the ONR, the Office of Naval Research, published papers on a human sixth sense and human basically psionic abilities, which is still extremely strange. This is why we need good, smart guys like Max, who are kind of really well researched into some of this psi connection.
Absolutely.
So let's go. I think we got some questions. We'll look through we'll look through here. So have you or anyone you know made any inroads to getting information around the energy source of these vehicles? Has anyone talked about plasma? Yes, I think Edgar Fouché in the TR-3B discusses superheated plasma along with mercury. Inroads as far as the energy source, there's disagreements. I know really smart people who think that we haven't quite cracked zero-point systems. I think to the story of Brad Sorensen, where zero-point systems are applicable. I've heard from numerous people that electrogravitics are a thing. You mind passing me a soda?
Yeah, I got you.
I think electrogravitics are is possibly a thing, too. Of course, there's the story of MFD, MHD. So there's quite a bit of information around energy systems. Nothing concrete yet. I don't know if you have heard anything else. Sorry, I was just kind of going off topic there. Do you guys believe Grush will ever be allowed on a skiff? They've now had nearly 18 months to hide everything. That is a good point, right? If locations are violated and there's not immediate actionable intelligence follow-up, that these locations will likely be cleared or further obfuscations created. If I remember, Grush did not get in a skiff with Burchett.
I don't think he got in the skiff with them at all.
Okay, yeah. I know that Burleson is at least been privy to the op-ed by Grush. So, you know, have these conversations occurred outside of skiff? I'm not sure, but to me, it's pretty unacceptable.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we talked about this a little bit, but do you think Boebert's comments were purposeful in order to harm public perception on this topic? Judging by the way she talked, I just think she probably carries a bit of the stigma, because I'd like to mention, guys, before the hearings even start, the cameraman, you know, when people were filing in, looked at me and said, oh, this is going to go on Ancient Aliens, right? Yeah. You know, what am I going to say to that? No, this is a serious congressional hearing. Right outside, I had to run out, use the restroom before we started. I hear a bunch of staffers or congressmen talking. This is what happens when you leave YouTube autoplay on for too long. And if you're finding my channel off autoplay, first of all, thanks for being here. But second of all, I mean, that's so foolish.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of mind and stigma that has been manufactured. And, you know, it's understandable if you have felt that and experienced that, because that is very well orchestrated by the CIA all the way back since 52. But many people fall victim to this.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing just to make jokes and just, you know, being coy about it and just being like, oh yeah, Ancient Aliens, whatever. It's funny to joke about. But I did notice that there were quite a few people that, you know, they kind of talk about it as if this is, you know, like there isn't really anything there, and it's still kind of a conspiracy, and like, you know, who are these people, and yeah, like, what are these programs? And yeah,
she treats it the same as maybe like chemtrails or other popular conspiracies, like yeah, birds.
You but also from her perspective, like, you know, she's kind of been like one of the conspiracy theorists in Congress. Like, that's kind of her reputation, if mm-hmm. you will. So, hey, I mean, roll with what you know, but I don't think her comments were super helpful or really appreciated by people in the UFO world that wanted sober conversation about this.
No, and I think a lot of the people that are going to affect change when we have Congress people like this are going to be their staffers.
Yep.
There's a world of staffers that take this very seriously who want to learn.
Yep.
So, and they want to affect change, and they want to have the information to brief their, not brief, that might be a poor word, but to inform their local, the person they work for and so forth.
Yep.
So Magic says, have you seen Sheehan making the rounds lately? What are your thoughts on everything he is saying? Seems worlds apart from just getting into the public zeitgeist. Well, we had lunch yesterday right by Sheehan and his crazy, crazy gray hair. And he also had like a disclosure event outside of the park right after.
There was a rally outside, like a block away from the Rayburn building where the hearing happened. And he spoke, and then a couple other individuals spoke as well. Yeah.
I think for the amount of information Sheehan puts out, he needs to start supplying adequate research, go along it, alongside of it, or evidence, or other people to confirm these statements. Danny Sheehan, of course, has been very consequential as a really interesting person. But before he continues to put forward new information, he kind of needs to figure out ways to back up his things he said previously.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what I will say about that with Sheehan is I think he's not a stranger to kind of fighting the government as yeah. well. And I think part of it is he has kind of a role to play as kind of the legal person that's helping facilitate stuff behind the scenes with certain players. But also, as we see kind of with this new Paradigm Institute, I think, you know, there's kind of a public perception or kind of awareness intention there of just trying to get that organization set up. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of why we're seeing this like interesting stuff with Sheehan, because traditionally, you know, he's a lawyer, he's an attorney, he's kind of working on the investigative space. But then also seeing him with like the new Paradigm Institute and that stuff as well, it's like, okay, how do you reconcile
selling
that?
Degrees?
Yeah, yeah.
For tens of thousands of dollars. Jimmy says, I have friends who believe it's almost definitely Chinese or Russian tech, especially Chinese. What, if any, gives you the confirmation this is fact alien/NHI? Well, I think quite a few factors. One of them is the persistent existence of this phenomenon for more than 80 years.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you can even go into other stories in history. But even dating back to the Magenta crash in 1933, there are similarities in this phenomenon in terms of crash shape,
yep.
in terms of performance characteristics of craft. I mean, you had Nazi scientists, Hermann Oberth, studying flying saucer flight dynamics, estimating tens, if not hundreds of thousands of miles per hour these things would be flown. You can also look at the G-forces experienced by some of these craft. You know, it's not a ballistic missile that can handle 120 Gs. It's not a human being that can sustain 9 Gs before seeing permanent injury. And I know Lou talked about this during the hearing, or was it UAPBF?
Sorry, say that again?
He talked about G-forces experienced by the craft. Was that the hearing?
That was at the hearing, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So Lou kind of lowballed that a little bit. If you look at the work by Kevin Knuth and Estimating Flight Characteristics of Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon, which is a great paper, I highly recommend everybody read it. It analyzes the performance characteristics of not just the 2004 Nimitz, but also the 1986 Japan Airlines case and other such cases. G-forces of these craft can be experienced of up to 5,000 Gs. That's very different. There's also numerous reports from under fast walkers that NORAD and NASA and the DSP Defense Support Program would call these craft back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s that had a term for craft that were entering or leaving Earth's atmosphere. And these would not show classical characteristics of, fuel-burning rockets and traditional prosaic technologies. These things would sometimes arrive from deep space or return to deep space.
Yep.
I don't know, especially in the 60s and 70s of Chinese tech, that's planning to do that.
Yeah. Well, also, again, we're also talking about sightings that have been seen even before modern weapons as well. And how far do we really want to go with this? Because I would say there is a lot of evidence to suggest that there was a phenomenon that existed well before the Second World War, the creation of, the world superpowers, all that stuff. So, you can try to figure out whether or not that's alien non-human. I personally think that seems to be the conclusion just based off of those historical reports. And I know there's a lot of researchers that look at that kind of like pre-modern history of UFO sightings,
which is very valid.
Yep. Yep.
And I think your friend is right about the idea that some of these craft might be ARB of Chinese or Russian origin. Absolutely. Just like many of the ARB are of United States origin.
Yep. But, and some of our allies possibly also have their own technology as well.
But I just think that many of the craft, especially when you start looking at craft characteristics and differences in reported craft that are considered ARB versus non-human craft, just the difference in the craft makeup. Non-human craft often described as perfect, rivetless, seamless, no visible means of propulsion, somehow able to go faster than the speed of sound and decelerate quickly without any sonic booms, with very minimal or no electromagnetic signatures or signatures of any kind. The performance characteristics of these craft are not prosaic, even to when people say, oh, well, military is 20 years ahead. There's, ballistic missiles 20 years from now are not surviving 5,000 Gs of force dropping from 50,000 feet to sea level in less than 2 seconds.
Yeah, it's not happening.
Okay. Got anything about my question on getting remote viewing under mainstream science scrutiny? Are there any efforts there? For me,
you should ask the SAIC.
Yes. And talking to Chris from Area 52, I would really like to maybe see if we can put on some public displays of remote viewing to maybe, introduce the channel to whether the efficacy or not, if there's nothing there. I would absolutely like to do that, because this would be something we'd all be learning together.
Well, they had a lot of those studies in the late 80s and 90s, and at least according to the government, there was there wasn't really a basis to continue funding of it. But then ultimately that whole program got transferred over to SAIC in 1995. So
do you believe the Blue Book classified version of his story where he says he saw the images? This is Danny Sheehan.
Yes. I would say after, I think there's been some records that have come out of the era, out of this whole declassification process, and particularly the Air Force Blue Book documents, the symbols that Sheehan has drawn out or whatever.
Those were put in NARA recently, right? The National Archives.
Yep. So the depiction that he gave of those symbols is dead accurate of the symbols that are in these Blue Book files.
Yeah. I'd also like to reference, it is a fact that there were programs working alongside Blue Book that were not unacknowledged, but not referenced. This would be Project Stork out of Battelle. Mm-hmm. And then you can also adhere to the testimony of other whistleblowers, such as Stephen Lufkin, who said that he was privy to a program more classified than Blue Book, a more classified Blue Book, basically, where he was shown some of the Roswell debris.
Mm.
And so, yes, I think that is a really good, question. Question, how do you guys picture disclosure? Personally, I think Burchett's whistleblower type protections won't pass, but if it does, I think there has to be someone walking out of Lockheed, et cetera. If there are pension protections, I think that could be possible. That's what I have to say.
Yep. I think the specific language of it is they're going to give whistleblower protections to any whistleblower that has knowledge of basically taxpayer funds that are being used. Mm-hmm. So I think the first inquiry, right, is government funds, taxpayer money that's being spent on this. And I think that that's good. I hope that those protections pass. But then I think the second part, right, and this goes back to kind of the theory of how does this get funded? well, if the government's not writing a blank check to Lockheed Martin, are they taking money from investors potentially? And then like, how aware are those investors in those types of programs? And
that's a question that's really
the messier legal questions that open up from that.
Questions like that you have been talking about and thinking about quite a bit the last couple of days.
I've talked with a lot of people about it. It's very interesting.
Okay. Eric says, any comments on Hal Putoff? He brought Lou into the program and many others. He met with H. Teller and worked on Grav Control. Best candidate for involvement in legacy program, IMO. I am really eagerly awaiting his appearance in the program.
He needs to get subpoenaed.
Yeah, he needs to get subpoenaed too. But I think he'd be a agreeable witness, because there's hostile witnesses, there's non-agreeable witnesses, and there's agreeable witnesses.
He should be encouraged to attend a hearing.
In a closed, yeah, Senate section. Okay, cool. Lou said this. Okay, yeah, talking about Lou and the Cold War, same as Grush. Do you believe that UAP are alive, as Luna said, a theory I've seen in the genre for a while? Well, as we talked about in the Immaculate Constellation report, the idea of biological craft would then kind of encourage that. I think it's quite possible. You know, we talk about this all the time. I don't think UAP and non-human intelligence is mutually exclusive or is really siloed. If there's one non-human intelligence here, it opens the door for numerous types of non-human intelligence, all with different technical capabilities and basically propulsion systems and methods of travel and methods of communication and methods of detailing their presence are all quite possible.
Yeah, I will say the movie Nope, Jordan Peele, great movie. Scary, but I can definitely see that happening.
After the specific mention of brain in the IC report, it's very, very, very startling to me. Okay. Oh, okay. This is a good one for us. Max, can you speculate on the origin of the sphere that was located underneath NSWC Crane? For anybody that doesn't know, the program Kermit and I worked on together was the Off-World Technologies Division,
yep,
experienced by Green Beret 18 Bravo Weapon Sergeant RA, Witness RA, who in the early 2010s was sent to RA for an advanced weapons training course. And here he and one other person, because of their high clearance levels and because of some of their accomplishments, level 5 of SEER, you know, deployments and so forth, were basically taken underground by a contractor, seen some interesting Russian ballistics and some interesting weaponry. As an 18 Bravo weapon sergeant, you have to be proficient with all forms of small arms fire. And then they're brought into a place deep underground. The air was described as very damp, stale, cold by RA, into an Off-World Technologies Division. Here the contractor, who we both highly suspect as SAIC, showed two pieces of technology, one an almost tablet device that seemed to be projecting writing. RA did not know if this was in his head or actually physically like a holographic projection of writing. And this piece was said to have been recovered during being recovered and was considered a weapon due to an electric or an energetic discharge during recovery. Mm-hmm. The other piece was a sphere about the size of a baseball with a small indent at the top. This was described as metallic, but very smooth and almost shimmering like oil on water.
Mm-hmm.
RA was told that this specific piece of technology somehow interacted with consciousness. As far as the origins of this, I've talked to Max, the person asking the question, and Kermit here, about another individual, Navy connected, who likely interacted with the same technology a couple decades prior. So if that's the case, the Navy might have had an active program with this piece for weird, kind of the psi stuff we were talking about. The origins, if it's housed alongside that gauntlet tablet type thing that is considered weapons technology, one has to assume that this was also a piece of technology recovered from a crash retrieval.
Absolutely. And I also think just the nature of the crash retrievals themselves, and we kind of see this in other reports here and there, is as these things are taken in, right, and as we're retrieving these craft, we're then trying to, you know, piece off these different areas of like, okay, Lockheed, figure out how the craft work. SAIC, figure out how this orb works, right? Northrop, figure out how this engine works, right? Mm-hmm. And just trying to piece these different areas and giving these technologies transferred over to private industry to try to see if they can figure out how this shit works.
So I at least don't know the origin, but I can with confidence say that this was taken off of a crash retrieval. Where, when, are there multiple? No idea. Absolutely no idea. The witness I've spoken to that encountered this was on the other side of the country, California to be exact. So was this program shelved that the Navy used with this? And then this is just housed for further analysis. And I would like to hearken back to Harold Malmgren, who spoke about being briefed in the 1960s about an otherworld technologies division.
Yep.
Very close.
Yep.
Do you guys feel like any of these quote unquote UFOs could be top secret government weapons? Absolutely. Probably, alien reproduction vehicle.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
It's just, I mean, a UFO is an unidentified flying object. If you see like an experimental aircraft and you don't know what the hell it is, you're going to think it's a UFO, right? But it could just be something like a, you know, new drone or, you know, the new stealth plane, whatever. So, yeah.
What do you say? We'll go for 10 more minutes answering questions.
Yeah. That's cool.
Then, all right, guys, we'll keep going for some questions for a few more minutes and then we'll, okay, we answered that about how put off Eric. Sorry if we're getting to the question slow, guys. I just think, you know, I'm glad Kermit feels the same way. Everyone's taking their time to ask questions, so.
Really appreciate it, y'all.
Yeah, and these are, I told you, Kermit, everybody asked the best questions here. Okay, with the admission that, yes, USG has a crash retrieval and reverse engineering program for UAP, this validates claims of Herrera and Weygand. Is there a lawsuit in the works, reparations? I think their cases are you know, far more kind of, I guess Michael's case doesn't relegate to that as much because remember, Michael's case talks about seeing an alien reproduction vehicle, this specifically octagonal shaped. I'm still trying to track down the manufacturer for that. Greer thinks it's Lockheed, but has proposed no evidence. But Weygand, his story is one of those more classic crash retrievals. And with some of the comments in the IC report about, you know, psychological effects and then the probability that was a DOE nest team. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of have to analyze that with a more credible, with a different lens. And you do with Michael now with the testimony of ARV. I just am waiting to see a dang report of a octagonal ARV, please.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me. Okay. Talking about the Oak Shandon serial numbers. What do you think it will take for mainstream scientific analysis to start looking into remote viewing and either confirm or debunk it for good? That's a good question. I have to assume academia approaching UAP and how they approach UAP is likely the same approach they take to remote viewing. I cannot think of a reason why the subject should not be studied seriously, especially when the Navy studies it.
Yeah. This might seem like a very random call out, but I'm now remembering there's a 60 Minutes documentary that happened that looked at, basically there was a scientific study that was done where they were trying to prove precognition, where individuals were like shown a set of numbers or something, and they basically had to predict what the next number and the sequence was going to be, like before they even saw it. And what they determined from that is that it seemed that there was some type of correlation between, you know, what we would call a sixth sense or something that's like, you know, exists in our mind. But there was a very real trend where like these individuals could like use this precognitive ability. So I feel like stuff like that and just kind of getting those types of reports and just getting the awareness out and then, you know, trying to come up with ways kind of similar to that study. I know it's kind of like weirdly specific and it's just off the dome. But I think things like that will kind of help us try to figure that out.
It's strange to me that kind of the fallback is, oh, the CIA did a study in the 80s under Stargate and nothing came from it.
Yeah.
That's not a reason not to study the subject.
No.
Okay. Thoughts on the Skinny Bob video? I think I get to ask this every time. I have no thoughts about it. I have never once studied it. At least from a first glance, it looks to be a little too smooth for realness. What do you say, Kermit? But I have not studied it at all.
Yeah, I don't have an opinion on any videos that claim to depict biologics or non-human intelligence.
So question, and of course, like, you know, if the politics are pertinent to UAP, of course we'll talk about it. Not to be political, but don't you worry that people like Boebert and Trump might lessen the credibility of the topic? Yeah. Half the country doesn't take him seriously. That is something I think we talked about, that if Trump really pushed disclosure, would that kind of be used as a talking point to discredit disclosure? Because so many people find Trump in kind of poor taste. It raises a good question. Boebert as well, as we kind of saw with the hearing, wrong attitude, in my opinion.
Yeah, I will say I had an interesting conversation with some staffers on the Democrat side. Yeah. They kind of brought up the same point too of just like, hey, you know, particularly in the hearing yesterday, a lot of the representatives in that were Republican. And I think as we think about the next 4 years and Trump being president and all of his new cabinet positions and whatnot, you know, I think we'll start to see some more answers. But again, I think to your point, right, when Boebert and Trump talk about this, I think people, particularly on the other side, kind of see it a certain way, and they'll just kind of check out and be like, oh, Trump's a crazy person. This just confirms my own opinion. I do think he could be a good asset. It's just, it's really comes down to the communication.
Yeah, it's tough to navigate now just with so much distrust in any administration, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. It's a great question. And if it's, yeah, go ahead.
We should talk about Trump's uncle, because that's something that I love to bring up when people get political about this. So Donald Trump's uncle was John Trump, who was a MIT professor who was, he worked for the radiation laboratory at Lincoln Lab.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like one of the early founders of radar. And in 1943, when Tesla died, John Trump was called in by the United States to basically document all of Tesla's patents and make sure that none of them were dangerous. So I don't want to get too speculative. I don't want to say that John Trump was part of the legacy program, but of all the people with all the relevant experience, I think his uncle would have been someone that would have known something.
That's a great point.
So
what is, KM asks, what is your opinion on Gold's testimony? If you consider begging for money, a testimony, I think it's disappointing he was not asked about material transfer between AUSAP, Bigelow Aerospace, and Lockheed Martin.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I was expecting. And same. Ultimately it's like, maybe Gold wasn't really involved with that. And right. So maybe, you know, they had conversations prior and they're like, I can't really talk about it because I just don't really know anything. But the fact they didn't even ask the question to begin with, just so like the public can know about that, because like we, the public, were aware of AUSAP, we're aware of Bigelow and all this stuff. Why didn't you ask the question at all?
Yeah.
That was weird.
The smell test, Gold was a really nice, well-to-do meaning guy, but NASA has been caught lying about UFOs before. So then being the most transparent agency he's ever worked for, you know, I'd have to agree with that. So Sawan, again, thank you, sir. Even the HOC are aware Carl Nell is firsthand, yeah, an Army Futures Command and Deputy CTO of Northrop Grumman. That's a guy who should have testified.
Yep.
What do you make of the idea that NHI may be a component of preventing disclosure? I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't have too much of a thesis there. I do like to think back to David Grush talking about agreements with NHI.
Yeah, and if there's positive and negative NHI, and you know, we can't really figure out what they want to do here, it wouldn't be hard to assume that there's NHI that don't really agree with the agenda, yeah. Right?
From an outside perspective, it's always really difficult for me to attribute human motivation to non-human intelligence.
Yeah.
Are we heading towards what Reagan spoke of, where humanity unites to fight an outside force? Listen, I think Reagan put plenty of defenses, plenty of money into those defenses under the SDI Star Wars program.
We had some really good stuff in the
Yeah, I think man. There's a lot of funds that were given to other programs and used for UAP stuff.
Yeah, but I think kind of coming back to the threat narrative here, I think there's been some discussion around that a little bit, of just like, you know, what these things are and how this is going to be presented to the public. I know Reagan's comments were really about like, you know, what happens if an alien threat gets revealed and then like the public, you know, the world would just unite all around together.
Yeah.
I don't really feel like this is going to happen with this situation. I think disclosure, the way it's playing out is being done in a way that like ensures like national sovereignty instead of like, you know, this being like a, oh shit, they're showing up and we have 5 years to prepare type thing, like something like from a movie. It's kind of interesting, but I don't think it's going to be like this big international, like new world order.
Yeah.
Thing, you know, I think really it's just people trying to get to the bottom of it.
And a lot of people, I think, use that to push the blue beam theory.
Oh yeah. Blue beam.
Okay. Question from Truth Sauce. The video you did about Mark McCandlish was awesome. Thank you, sir. Any further discussions on, with the living friend that threatened you? Yes. And he threatened me again. And I found other people who he's threatened as well. So maybe he needs to be summoned as a hostile witness. Maybe he needs to be summoned. Okay, awakening to reality. Hey, what's up, man? Jonathan, thank you for joining. Looking for the cues. Okay, yes, Matchbar just talked about this. Remember, off-world technologies is mentioned by Harold Malmgren in relation to Richard Bissell. I think he specifically said other world technologies, but still.
And he was, Bissell was CIA director as well.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. So Long ago, when we got claims that people from Greer stating the Pentagon and co. have been opting funds illegally, an estimated $2 trillion were unaccounted for. How can Congress get accounts? And tell them about you trying to talk to Catherine Austin Fitz.
Yeah, so I mean, I reached out to Catherine a handful of times when I was writing my recent report on the legal financial framework. A lot of the stuff that I kind of pulled and talked about really comes from her SolariMissingMoney.com website. Just treasure trove of information about financial covert operations and stuff like that. Highly encourage y'all to check that out if you're interested in that. But no response from her, unfortunately. But this estimated $2 trillion unaccounted for, that still exists. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people aren't really aware of this, but the Department of Defense is now being required to basically go through full independent audits of itself, which it's never really had to do that in its history before, up until actually 2017. Interesting date. And what's interesting is just in the past 6 and 7 years of Pentagon audits, if you look at just the money and just kind of the remediations that they've made, it is a black hole that is trillions of dollars worth, and it's not going away. And it's not gone away.
Fitz said it's not just DOD, but housing and urban development.
It's a lot of other agencies. Yep. From her account, she saw cumulative $4 trillion move from Department of Defense and Department of Housing and HUD and DOD, $4 trillion cumulative in that 1 year that she was in office. Yeah.
So this is just an interesting thing while we scroll down and get to the rest of the questions. None of these guys were whistleblowers. I agree with that in the sense that we talked about earlier that we're both familiar with accounts where people who are planning to testify have been threatened up to the day of not to, and certain congressmen being a little bit surprised or expecting kind of or more firsthand people go for. Okay, hey, here's one especially for you, Kermit. Have you guys come across the work of Trevor James Constable? He talked about sky creatures back in 77 and says the movie Nope has similarities to his work. I personally haven't, but I'd love to kind of check that out now. I also found the movie pretty interesting.
I'm gonna have to put that in my notes. Yeah. So thank you for the reference.
Thank you, Punch Drink. I appreciate that a lot.
Trevor James Constable.
Okay, sorry. Look through a couple more questions. Hey, thank you, John S. You rock as well.
Sky creatures, so cool.
Let's see. Michael made those kind of claims, and I still don't know if there's any veracity to them, and so forth. So Wang Boss, thank you so much for the $5. Why were no ads run against UAP caucus members? Deliberately so, or is the topic that obscure? I think the topic is that obscure.
Like, is this saying like during their, like when they were seeking election?
Maybe for UAP caucus, maybe in the sense of like, why are there no inflammatory posts against guys like Lester or some of the guys really trying to talk to staffers and so forth.
Okay, got you. I think it's just obscure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, like, the congressional hearings were very well attended, but I will say you could probably guess who a majority of the people were there just based off of who talks a lot on Twitter and Reddit.
But yeah, anybody asking about Brad has given me nothing but yelling at me in all caps or giving me death threats. Leslie Kane thought it was disturbing, but also had a laugh with me about it. So if you can divulge who are the most interesting people you connected with in DC, it's been a good way to meet movers and shakers. The most interesting person, not at liberty to kind of talk about that, but some of the interesting people, talking with Lou, talking with Gallaudet, I made a list of people I talked to. So let me go through. Okay. Yep. So Lester Nair, Jesse Michaels, Chris from Area 52, Amar from Yes Theory, Tim Gallaudet, Jeremy Corbell, Michael Gold, Lou Elizondo, James Falk, Merrick Von Rennenkamp, Tim Burchett, Eric Bertelsen, Nancy Mace, Danny Sheehan, Michael Schellenberger, Missileman Jack, awesome Twitter account, Matt Ford, Matthew Pines, Leslie Kane, and probably a couple more. And I got to talk to all these people.
Yeah.
Right? Like conversations. We had like a 15-hour day yesterday.
Yeah, no, it was like, I mean, it started at 7 a.m. and then we got back to the hotel at like 10. We were tired. We were so pooped.
We were walking back from the place in which UAPDF was held back to our hotel. And mm-hmm. I think both of us were just kind of having like a really surreal experience.
Absolutely.
I mean, yesterday was probably one of the most consequential days I've ever had. And true honor. I mean, we're just two guys, and we get to, I'm really proud of the community for kind of not being so much of a closed door community, and seeing a lot of people, Democrats, Republicans, smart lawyers like Ivan, a lot of these people kind of communicating and talking.
Yeah. it's a lot of people working together, and it's very humbling to see it. And it's very exciting because it's a lot of people that have good motivations, and they're inquisitive, and they just want the truth, you know, and it's, everyone's on the same team.
What if we're a science experiment, or perhaps our existence hinges on us not knowing we're an experiment? Maybe that's why they don't want to disclose. That's quite possible. I mean, there are reports even outside of Bob Lazar of the human genome being tampered with, or humans being, and I don't want to count in Zachariah Sitchin and the Sumerians, mm-hmm. because I think there's some problems with those translations, but it's a very valid theory.
Yeah. I mean, Lude talks about in his book, he equates humanity to the 800-pound gorilla in the exhibit, right? When we steal the tranquilizer gun, and then what happens when we knock on the zookeeper's door? Good question.
Viagra 500 milligrams. I get a chance to watch Knapp's new documentary. We had an awkward episode with Michael. No, I have not seen that yet. That's Investigating Alien, and I will watch it at some point. I haven't seen anything besides the trailer. What's this new Dan Farah docu that's being overhyped? I don't know. Do you know anything about the documentary? Because I've been asked like multiple times, is this person that you talked to in the documentary? And I was like, no. Mm-hmm. What is the documentary?
Yeah, I don't know too much about it. I know it's been kind of talked about in tandem with Fox's production of the program. Mm-hmm. To my knowledge, this Farah Films doc is going to feature like 30 different high-level witnesses.
30
and mostly government, military.
I hope Senate. So, but yeah. I find that tough to,
however, I don't think there's been any communications about if that documentary has finished, mm-hmm. what the state of it is, and whether or not it's going to be published. I think the rumor was it was supposed to be published before the election, and then it was after the election, and then like even still, there's no date on the calendar yet for it, but it exists. It's real. And the people that are in the film that we got to shake hands with, they talked about it with us. They're like, yes, this is like the Farah film. I was in this, whatever. And I think, okay. I think even Michael Gold even mentioned Michael it too Gold during the hearing. He was mm-hmm. like, I'm going to talk about it in this, this documentary that's coming out. I'm like, okay, cool. Like we need to see that now.
So who is Dan Farah?
That's a good question. Is it like a documentary?
I have no idea.
I looked this up.
Thoughts on Project Gravatar, the new Bob Lazar doc. So I got to talk at length to Chris from Area 52, who just got on Luigi from Project Gravatar. Chris got me really excited. Did you talk to him at all about Gravatar?
No.
I told him straight up, the reason I don't really talk about Bob Lazar is because I'm so biased towards Bob that it's difficult for me to talk about it. But he got me hyped. What do you see about Dan?
Dan's a documentary filmmaker, but he also produced movies, notably Ready Player One, which was a movie that aired in theaters in 2018.
That was one of the movies of all time.
Yeah.
So as I've heard that another hearing is happening on the 18th, or whenever the next hearing is. Maybe doing. I think this is more a Senate hearing on Arrow specifically. Yep. So don't get your hopes about that. That's going to be probably pretty dry.
It will be interesting to see how Kozlowski discusses kind of the Arrow's kind of operations. And comparing that back to how Kirkpatrick's made those statements.
So we'll answer five more and then we'll wrap up. Truthsaw says, I hated the comment about some guy in a Winnebago. And the same thing happening now happens in the 40s, 50s, including the 52 flap. Who said that?
That was the comment about like the credibility of the witnesses. Like you guys aren't all just a bunch of people living in a Winnebago. That was the comment.
To make fun of people going like to see craft outside of Area 51, all the guys who would get in the, something like that.
Maybe I thought it was in the context of like they were at like one of the representatives asked Elizondo like what his career kind of mm-hmm. was and like what his experience was, and it was like the point of like, okay, you're not just like some crackpot in Winnebago.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, needs to stop getting names thrown around like crackpot, ancient aliens, or YouTube being left on
the
too
stigma
long.
Just needs to stop. Yeah, like
Jimmy says, thoughts on the document from Sarbacher on Oppenheimer von Neumann being involved with crash retrievals. I've covered Sarbacher very often, and I think he's an extremely credible individual. You're pretty familiar with Sarbacher too, right?
ish.
Okay.
Yeah, I put a lot of yeah.
But I am not surprised there, especially because he's mentioned him at other times as well. Let's see. Truth Sauce, did that bother you? Shouldn't these congresspeople be more well-informed for the same nuclear base incursions? Okay, I understand your comment now in this context. Yes, of course that bothers me. I hate the name-calling, the throwing around. There's rude, snide comments I hear outside, and it's just what we do. What Kermit just talked about, the byproduct of the stigma being so darn successful.
Yeah.
Ugh. Okay, let's go through. Sia Awakening, Sia Man, Winnebago catching strays. Okay, we'll do this one, and then one more question if one pops up while we're talking. What are your thoughts on abductions? This is still a difficult question. I love the work of John Mack. It's difficult for me to connect abductions to what I'd say my bread and butter is, which is craft retrieval, reverse engineering, and witness testimony analysis. So abductions are fascinating, and there's a lot of witnesses under Greer that talk about human abductions.
Mm-hmm.
For my lab purposes and so forth, one witness in specific 10892 in his witness log. I need to do more due diligence and read more of John Mack's book, because I'm not closed off to the idea. I'm just ill-informed.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, again, my bread and butter is the Excel file that is the classified balance sheet, and trying to see that. But in terms of abductions, like my thoughts of it is like, you know, kind of backed with Mac is like Mac's kind of thesis of it is like, you know, these people are, you know, genuine. They have these experiences and they're telling like an accurate, genuine account of their experience. Now, is that something that's happening physically? Like, are they being physically taken from this space and put into a spaceship? Mm-hmm. Or is this happening like within their mind of like, they're having this like experience within consciousness that they don't really understand, but in their brain, they think it's like an abduction event.
Yeah.
You know, it could be something like both. But what I will say is, I'm kind of a, you know, I come from a Catholic background, so I do fundamentally believe in things like, you know, possession, demonic possession, things like that. And I think that there is a little bit of tie-in between those two things.
I wouldn't be surprised. Okay, we got two more and we'll go through it. Truth
three more,
Sauce.
Three more.
We talked about the new Netflix series. I haven't seen it. Have you seen
Investigation Alien? Yeah, no, Investigation. But I'm watching it this weekend.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Damply Dude says, do thinking about UFOs and aliens make them aware of you? I think it's quite possible in any scenario, the longer you stare into the void, the more it stares back.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the best realms of cosmic horror. So I think it's quite possible. I've been told by some close friends, you know, not necessarily experiencers, but just like the hitchhiker effect, it will now be in play once you get closer.
Well, we have not seen an orb in the hotel room.
No, yeah. Yeah,
I would like to see an orb in the hotel room. That's kind of my thoughts on that.
But, I've had nothing weird besides death threats, to be honest. Troll Mama, thank you so much. I really appreciate you. Thank you very much. Thank you so much. Last question we'll get to, or I guess more of a comment, and we'll see if we have one more. If UFOs are real, we find out grays are real, then boom, abductions are real. Simple as that. I can't argue with it.
Boom. Show us a TR3B while you're at it, too.
All right, please. All right, guys, with that, we'll wrap up tonight. I hope everybody enjoyed having Kermit on. I'd certainly love to have him on more. So show some love in the comments if you guys want to see him again. And, you know, if there's more hearings, like Sheehan said, coming up, we will be there. And I'll get this dude in the media room with me. But thank you guys so much for joining. And expect the new video within the next week. And then Kermit and I will be covering the Soul Show. So thanks, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Later. Let me hit end.